If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Welcome everyone to this edition of the Completely Unnecessary Podcast. We are here Tuesday, January 30th, 2018. It's 18. Ian just gave me a cute little smirk, a very whimsical smirk. He wants to ask me to get some.
Woo!
Wants to ask me to get some Dairy Queen after school.
Yeehaw!
That was.
I'm just trying to get.
Well, that's Ian Ferguson.
I'm amping.
I'm Pat Country. We sound nice and warm with our new microphones.
They're very nice.
Yeah, I think you've already spit on the windscreen, which things.
I haven't. Oh, it's dry.
But what's interesting is that we were going to save these microphones. By the way, how's everyone doing out there? I can't hear you. What's interesting though, we were gonna save these microphones for the soft relaunch at Castle Country, but we're using them. We're testing them. I think they're going to be fine. So coming up on the show, Ian will be talking Dragon Ball Z Fighters. We're going to be talking about a bill introduced in legislation in the U.S. possibly to regulate loot boxes, the Todd Rogers Twin Galaxies dragster controversy.
Gross, motherfucker.
A Pong game show, maybe? The Royal Rumble match. And your Q&A. Ian, I know you're feeling like shit. I'm not doing too much better. I cried during yoga. I can admit it. I'm a man.
I cried so many times today. And you cried during yoga? We're just a...
What is a mess of emotions and...
You ever watch Home Movies?
No, I've heard that's a great show. I haven't watched it, though.
It's a whole episode based on the Cry Walkers.
The Cry Walkers?
It's about men who walk in the woods and cry. It's a good episode. You should watch it.
Okay.
Coach McGurk gets sucked into going on a walk with the Cry Walkers.
He just can't stop crying.
Yeah, he cries a lot.
I see the beard's come back, so that was a short-lived experiment with the shave.
No, I'll shave again.
I like it, though. I mean, it's clean, as long as you keep it clean.
I just, you know, this is about the length I want. I just need to clean it up.
Yeah, you know, it's like scrotum hair. It can't get too messy.
I keep that real neat. Anyways.
Neat like your whiskey. How did you enjoy your first out of four SoCal Retro Gaming Expos I tried to get you to go to?
I did. I really enjoyed it. Saturday was a very positive experience. Lots of nice people. It was shoulder to shoulder packed.
I think it was over 3,000 people at the gate for the weekend.
It was tight. The great boxes did extraordinarily well.
Ian sold surprised. Great boxes with nice little funny, insane, I hope you scanned some of them, bird drawings.
Yeah, they were.
Fantasy bird drawings.
They were crazy. Very tripped out for a reason. There was cards in them and stuff. They were fun. They were
packs
fun
of cards.
Packs of old stock cards,
like MTV Raps pack.
Rap pack cards. Some people were lucky enough to get San Diego Zoo cards.
I'm fucking jealous. I didn't know those existed.
Yeah, Vonnie only found 3 packs of those. So those were particularly hard chase cards.
That's insane.
Yeah. But yeah, that was a lot of fun.
I'll get the whole set of that. I hope they have Sam the Fishing Cat. Yes, the Fishing Cat I name Sam whenever I go to the zoo.
I love the Fishing
Cat. I don't
cat.
Know if it's a female or male, but I call him Sam
the
Fishing
whole,
Cat.
I mean, the Fishing Cat area smells like pee, but I can.
I don't care.
Neither do I.
I'll let Sam pee in my mouth. I don't care.
Mm.
Fishing Cat's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
You know the Polis Cat? The Polis Cat's getting more popular. That fucking tubby, cute.
Like, that thing's awesome.
Like Russian. Yep. Mongolian fucking cat that lives up in the mountains, the most adorable thing ever.
Have you ever caught the fishing cat fish? Because I did once, and
yes,
it was
I think
the
it
best
once.
Thing.
I think once I saw him jump in, but best. mostly Sam's like up above, hiding from us humanoids.
Yeah,
cats don't want to be bothered.
Sam's so, a good name for
I'm
that.
I'm like
cat.
A cat. I don't want to be bothered by people.
Yeah.
Leave me alone. You know. But anyway, what were saying? Oh yeah, SoCal.
Oh, SoCal, great time. Best green room ever.
Oh yeah, the green room set up for the guests. I mean, you have all the candy and drinks stocked, and you can play foosball and air hockey and a fucking slugfest by Williams, one of my favorite all time. I guess it qualifies as a pinball machine.
It's a pitch and bat, which pitch does bat. Qualify as pinball.
I played last time I was there. I
qualified.
I played
as pinball.
9 full innings last time. I didn't care.
Yeah, it's great. You know. I beat Norm handily. Yeah, love you, Norm, but I kicked your ass.
It's fun. It's a fun 2-player challenge, though.
Oh, it is,
because you know you have screwball, fastball, curve, and it's actually tough to really time it.
Oh, and it throws the pitches like, I mean, it's a curveball. It's a screwball. Anyway, yeah, it was a really good time. I had fun with our panel. It was a really good panel, good crowd. Gerard needed people to fill in for his panel because Alex was unfortunately sick. It seems like everyone has had the flu in the past 2 weeks. That was a really fun panel.
A lot of people. I've avoided it. I usually get the flu like once every 2-3 years.
Got my flu shot.
Okay, don't give me any of that residual flu shot disease, because some people have a bad reaction to it and get sick anyway.
If you have an egg allergy.
Egg allergy?
That's a big... Yeah, they always ask if you have an egg allergy.
Are people allergic to eggs? I did not know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't eat pasta then. You can't eat breads and stuff.
Imagine how sad that would
be. No, half of your breakfast items are just off the table.
And I love
no
breakfast.
Waffles, no pancakes.
I can't eat breakfast at breakfast usually.
What?
I
have to wait till lunch to eat breakfast?
I would have to wait till dinner. I don't get hungry until dinner.
You're like Frank. I didn't know that. Frank eats like once a day. He's like a snake.
I'm a lot like Frank in a lot of ways.
Not for your musical taste, but yes. You have the exact opposite.
I like some of Frank's music, just not the Beatles.
That's a big one, though, not to like.
Anyway, what have you been up to, Pat? How are you?
Oh, I was crying in yoga. It wasn't totally my fault.
We cry a lot.
No, I don't. I don't cry a lot. I cry like twice
a year. I mean, you don't. It's like squeezing blood from a stone.
Squeezing tears from my rock face.
From your rocks. Yes, from your rocks, Pat.
That are nice and clean and tight.
And, yeah, tightly shaved. Jesus, fuck.
But there was this musical... The music in Shavasana. Shavasana is where you relax. It's the meditation.
Yeah.
Technically, yoga is meditation, but when you Shavasana, you're done with your practice. And there was like a piano drawl playing that like just sucked me in. I was like, oh my God, this is very emotional. And I just started like in yoga. I just did it.
I laugh only because I understand. Like,
it's happened like 3 times in 10 years of yoga.
I'll be at the movies, and if it's the wrong day, I'll see a preview for a movie that looks like shit, but if the soundtrack is like overly epic, I'll be like, "Woo!
I'm getting chills watching the Two Towers trailer.
I gotta choke this back." So I feel you.
So here's the thing, Ian.
Here's the thing.
I've enjoyed our little vacation here.
It's been nice
at Fergusonville. However, the next podcast will be at Castle Country. We're gonna do the soft relaunch of the show, and it'll be in the studio.
I'm looking forward to that.
I'm looking forward to it, and I have a nice table. We're gonna get a table made, but in the meantime, we have a temp table. You guys have to let us know if you want us to use the Zelda tablecloth or something more solid color to be more professional. We shall see, but I think it'll be fun. We have the mics, and we're ready to go there. And I got to get the game room together, though. I have someone visiting me next week. I have to get the game room together. No, not a prostitute. They're not interested in games. But someone's going to be visiting me. I got to get the game room together. Can't reveal why right now. You will find out in due time. But other than that, life is okay. It's not as bad as it was 2 weeks ago or 2 weeks before that. So it's getting gradually better. Around the new year, it kind of hit a low. And now it's a little bit better. But it's getting better. I'm charging on back to the gym, which is good. I did squats on Friday, and I hadn't done them in over a month. And that was like, ooh, woo.
Pop a squat.
I pop multiple. I usually do 3 sets of 12, and I do some leg press sets
nice.
On Fridays. Get your legs nice and swole for the weekend.
Yeah.
That's what's good. So anyway, Ian, you wanted to talk about Dragon Ball Z.
Oh, Fighters. Yeah. I mean, so what I've been up to is I formed a band.
Okay.
Yep.
I did not know that.
Yep. I formed a band. You can follow us at Electronica Boys, B-O-I-Z.
This is real. This isn't a joke.
Oh, no. This is not a joke. That would be me and my friend Anthony Mann.
B-O-I-Z?
B-O-I-Z. We have not put anything out yet. That would be me and my friend Anthony Mann.
Is he local?
Nope. He's not. He's in Ontario, Canada. at NTRSKT, I believe. We're going to take the world by storm. May take a while, but we'll let you know when. And other than that, I've been playing Dragon Ball FighterZ. And
wait, you're actually going to produce music with this person? Like, you're actually, like together?
I mean, that's the goal. Yeah.
Okay.
You know, just sounds like a fun thing to do. I mean, we might be a fake band. We might even be like Spinal Tap, but we'll see what happens.
I like how your profile picture is like pictures of random plastic bowls.
Oh, those are two pictures of Glade air fresheners kissing each other.
This is starting off well, this project.
Yeah, it's to represent love.
Oh, okay.
You know, love can be found anywhere, even among air fresheners.
All right.
So, after that, I've been playing a lot of Dragon Ball FighterZ and Monster Hunter World. Dragon Ball FighterZ is a huge release. It's
huge.
I mean, really. sir. It's big because it's probably the first quality Dragon Ball Z fighting game ever released. It's released by Arc System Works, who makes the Blaze Blue and the Guilty Gear fighting games. It's also a tag fighter. It's a 3-on-3 tag fighter.
3-on-3.
So like Marvel vs. Capcom 3.
Okay.
And Marvel vs. Capcom 2. It mostly utilizes characters from Dragon Ball Z and Dragon Ball Super. Some of the characters obviously cross over from Dragon Ball, but only because they're in Dragon Ball Z. It's absolutely gorgeous. From what I've played, it's fun. It's easy to pick up. I can see where the technical play is definitely going to come in. It's easy to pick up because a lot of the supers and specials are the same per character. So like a quarter circle forward plus light and medium is always going to launch some sort of super special. So you can grab characters and kind of mix and match and see what feels comfortable to you based on their moves without having to learn necessarily a whole new move set per character. Doesn't mean that the moves aren't different. Doesn't mean that they don't play different, but you don't necessarily have to try to memorize a new character every time.
Oh, I see. Okay.
You get what I'm saying? So you can play around with different play styles without necessarily having to try to, you know, memorize stuff every single time.
Sure.
Now, some characters obviously can break that rule, but it's not as common.
So in terms of the gameplay, you would compare it to a fighting game like Marvel vs. Capcom 3, where a lot of juggling and tag-ins and things
mean,
like
if,
that.
If you want to simplify it down to its most basic, sure, you can compare it to something like Marvel vs. Capcom. I would say more like 2, where, yeah, you're tagging in and out. You have assists. Pull an assist.
I'm watching it right
tags.
Now. There's like 20 hit combos regularly sort of thing, where it's like up in the air, 1-2 tag, and it cuts away to a super or whatever special.
And very much like in Dragon Ball, you can, you know, do air chases on opponents, which, you know, feels to me a lot like stuff from Arcana Heart 3, which is another fighter. You can disappear and teleport. You can do all sorts of crazy shit in the game, and it's a lot of fun. So I'm going to have to play more to have a final judgment on it, but I definitely feel that as far as Dragon Ball Z fans go, this is easily the best thing that's been released as far as a fighting game goes. My only beef is the roster is a little bit limited.
Are you going to add more? How many is it?
It's 21 with, I think, one unlockable character, and then there's going to be 8 DLC characters, which at this point, unfortunately, is basically how it goes.
That's so funny you say that's a limited roster, 21. I would think that that's not, but then you say there's 3.
If it was 1-on-1, I wouldn't say it's limited, but it's 3-on-3.
There's a lot of combinations.
However, if it plays out that they're balanced, I understand. And Arxis usually does make fairly balanced characters.
I do love the animation style and how when it animates from a cutscene to back to the gameplay stuff, it's flawless. It looks insane. It looks like a cartoon.
My buddy Adam Gazowski, who's a comic book colorist, was just watching us play the other night, and he was watching the effects and how the coloring goes, and he was like, he understood how it was happening, and he was just, this is gorgeous, you know? The other one, Monster Hunter World, if anyone's ever played Monster Hunter before, Monster Hunter World is fantastic. I'm just as sad as anyone who has a Switch that Monster Hunter XX didn't get ported over to it, because I think the Switch is a beautiful console for a Monster Hunter entry. And I played 3 and 4 Ultimate on the 3DS and loved both. I'm a big fan of the series. But this is a great game for console owners. It's a gorgeous game, and Monster Hunter is kind of notorious for being hard to get into. So the Monster Hunter series was kind of an evolution of the Phantasy Star Online series, where basically it's an online RPG, but it's not an MMO. Okay, so you create your character, and in these modern versions you get what's called a Palico, which is part of the feline race. So you get to make a little cat buddy who goes out with you on adventures.
I want a cat buddy.
And you go monster hunting, and the monsters look very much like dinosaurs or dragons. And this one, instead of throwing you in with very little information on crafting and the different types of quests, kind of holds your hand a little bit at first and teaches you how to get into it. Which is great, because Monster Hunter is a really fun game with a lot to offer in terms of crafting and questing, and you know, you can spend a lot of time crafting, or you can spend a lot of time researching monsters. You can do all sorts of things, and these are things I think, depending on how much you've played Monster Hunter, you might miss entirely on a normal playthrough of an entry. Because they're known to be very hard to get into. Like I said, they don't hold your hand. This one eases you into it more. Some people, especially like a lot of Nintendo fanboys, and I know we kind of come across as those, but I mean, I will.
I'm a Turbo fanboy more than a Nintendo fanboy.
I'm a
Neo Geo Pocket Color.
I'm a Neo Geo Pocket Color fanboy. Yes. That is definitely
Let's be proper here about what we're actually fanboys of.
But
that cat's adorable, by the way. There's a cat with like one eye.
Oh, you looked it up?
I'm looking at the IGN review.
Yeah, I made Spike. He's real awesome.
Are you making your own cat?
Oh yeah, you can.
Oh god,
oh, the created
oh,
character
oh,
is.
Oh god, don't! I'll make.
You create your character, no. And then you create. Your Palico.
I'm making Mocha and Fajita.
Yeah.
I'm making both.
I mean, you can. I made Spike. He's very cranky looking.
That's okay. Now I want to get this because just to have my fucking old Cuddles who passed away 20 years ago.
Some people are trying to write this off as too casual, but it's actually not. Once you get into it, it's very much the same game it's always been. Very, very brutal. You know, it's hard, but it's, it at least gives you a fighting chance.
You just go around killing monsters with your cat. Is that what you're doing?
Yeah, basically. And then
I want to do that.
And then you harvest that. And then you harvest you harvest the monster's materials, and then you go craft weapons.
Did the other one have cats?
They started adding the cats in.
That's brilliant.
3 or 4.
I mean, that's just brilliant. I mean, I'm on board. I didn't care until you said make your own cat. I'm like,
They add all sorts of ridiculous stuff. Like, there's going to, they love to bring in other licenses. So I think this is releasing later on Xbox One, but they've already got on day one free Horizon Zero Dawn content.
Uh huh.
And they're going to be adding Street Fighter content. And I believe.
What do you fight Zangief?
And if I remember correctly, for Ultimate 4, you could get costumes for your Palico that looked like Isabelle from like Animal Crossing and stuff like that.
Okay.
They have such a blast with this series. As a matter of fact, I have... Where is it? I love this series so much. I can't see it in here. It might actually be in the bedroom. I have a pillow that looks like the roasted meat icon from the series.
The roasted meat icon?
Oh, because you actually pop out a spit during a quest, and you can roast meat while a little jingle plays, and you have to time it properly because you have to eat the meat to regain stamina.
Oh, okay.
So you can carve meat from certain creatures, and then you roast the meat. It's an amazing game.
You can feed some to your cat now, too.
Oh, your cat's good.
Your cat's fine.
Your cat's good. The cat goes off and will help you fight creatures, or it will go find you treasure.
Oh, really?
Oh, your cat's amazing. And you can craft new gear for your cat.
Okay. I don't have time to play this game.
Well, you don't have a PS4, so it doesn't matter.
Is that going to be in the Switch eventually?
No. World will not be on the Switch. I'm still hoping for a port of XX, because I love Monster Hunter so much, I'd play both.
All right, well, you'd be happy to know that Pro Jared gave it a 9 out of 10 on his video review. You'd be happy to know that.
Oh.
It just came up here.
That's some good taste.
That's some good taste. There you go. Ian.
Yeah.
I not that I'm a prognosticator on this stuff, but didn't I say that there are going to be more regulation coming down the pike about these loot boxes? You said it too.
Yep, and I'm happy to see it.
Started in Europe, and within a couple of months, like 5 weeks, it's like, well, what's going on here? So a state senator in the U.S. wants to regulate loot boxes in Washington. So, all right. And this got into the news, obviously, because of Star Wars Battlefront 2. But it's really been happening the last 2 to 3 years, where it's becoming more prevalent. Where loot boxes create an imbalance in the game. You feel like you got to buy them to not even get ahead. You got to buy them to stay even with the rest of the pack, it seems like. Or else you got to play 150 hours to earn it without spending money. You know.
It's interesting, too, to me, that this got introduced because of Battlefront 2.
Well, that was huge news.
Right. But Battlefront 2, because of the backlash, didn't actually end up selling the loot boxes. But that was the thing that I think really brought it to the forefront.
It was Star Wars. It was holiday season, which didn't help. You know,
Overwatch does this a lot. I think this is, you know, Overwatch is, as much as I like the game, they abuse this.
So
horribly.
The state senator is Kevin Ranker. And the bill says, this is in quotes, and this is why it's going to force the industry to self-regulate like they did with the ESRB. Like,
yes.
Sit down, come up with standards and practices that you all can agree on, so the government doesn't have to step in and do it.
Right.
And that's what they were trying to do with the ESRB in the 90s. Like, we don't want to do it, but we will have to unless you get your shit together. So this is the first step here. It's happening in one state, but this can easily then spread to other states. And then eventually it can spread nationally with a federal bill. So the bill says, industry, sit down, figure out what is the best way to regulate this. It is unacceptable to be targeting our children with predatory gambling masked in a game with dancing bunnies or something. I think it's funny. It's not that far off, though. Is he that far off? Not really. So it's going to be required the Washington State Gambling Commission to consult with the industry and commit a near year-long survey before submitting their findings by December 1st. So they're going to actually look into, okay, what's happening here? What are ways we can improve this? I'm not going to just go off half-cocked. All right. Recommend how to regulate loot boxes and restrict the sale of games that include them, especially to younger players. I think that's key. Believes loot boxes and similar mechanisms are especially harmful for children who don't know better. Of course.
Right.
Of course.
This is
just an easier, more expensive, you know, a gumball machine with the little fucking plastic
pawn figures, yeah.
Or whatever. It's like, even with that, you're hanging, yeah, mom, give me 50 cents to get that. Oh, no, you didn't get it. Okay, we're going home. Not with this. So the parents aren't around. Click, 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 click. Oh, $150 bill. Great. And what I always argued for about what's so bad about this is that for a lot of these games, the odds are not revealed for what are your chances of getting that item you want.
You can't look them up, but you have to go deep.
Is it 1 in 10? Is it 1 in 50? Is it 1 in 100? And if they change, do you know the odds change? Like, do you know? You know, it's not like you're when you go to a casino, the odds of winning in blackjack or craps are absolute for what they are. That's not going to change.
Right.
With this, it can be a click of a button behind the scene. And, oh, that special weapon used to be 1 in 50. Now it's 1 in 100 because you know we can make that much more money. So it looks like, according to this article from Engadget, Apple was finally required. They required games in the Apple Store to list their loot box odds. So that's good. Apple said, we have to do this ourselves. We should. China forced every developer across all platforms to disclose theirs a year ago. So China is ahead of us when it comes to this, believe it or not, which is kind of weird, but all right.
Okay.
He's and according to this article, that's the only reason we know the odds in every Overwatch, Hearthstone,
right,
and Heroes of Storm loot box drop. Because Blizzard did not reveal them publicly, so China, it was through China forcing them to do it.
Okay. I was wondering why we knew the odds. Okay, for Overwatch.
But I don't. But even if you went that far and regulated to say that, okay, this is kind of gambling, just tell us the fucking odds so that we know you're not playing tricks on the consumer where, you know, if I know it's 1 in 1,000, maybe I won't go for that or won't get my hopes up versus it's 1 in 10 or 1 in 50 or 1 in 100. You know what I mean?
I mean, it's still gambling. I mean, scratch-offs give you the odds, but
you have to know the odds, though. Yeah. Never tell me the odds. Well, here you should. Because you're not feeding it to some weird ass, you know what I mean? Because it is very psychological, and you can't get addicted very quickly to it.
Sure.
And if you know your friend has that weird ass item that they got, you don't know how easy or hard it's going to be to get. You don't know how much money it's going to take. And maybe they do something where they even out where, well, you can gamble to get it, or you can just pay out what the odds would be to get. You know what I mean? Like, at least they can do something so that it's not as hidden as it is now. And I think that's really the problem. It's behind a fucking Wizard of Oz veil.
Sure.
How this works.
I agree. And I think these sorts of things are actually, and they need to figure it out, because it really is, at this point, deterring people from buying games, which I think is great. So you look at something, if we go back to Battlefront 2, there was actually an article, I think it was just put out today or yesterday, where they said that, where EA was bitching and moaning about how Battlefront 2 missed its sales marks by a great amount. Here's the funny thing. They blamed the kerfluffle over the loot boxes on that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and the microtransactions. So they did away with those, and they blamed the misunderstanding over it on that. And then in the same article, announced that they would soon be bringing back microtransactions to try to make up for that lost money. I mean, no one learns.
Well, if you have stakeholders in the company, it's a public company, you know.
They're
going to do it.
My question is, so did they learn and they're going to put microtransactions into this one to try to make some money back and maybe not fucking do it next time?
They're going to do it. They may just do it smarter. They'll just do it where it won't be as blatantly awful in order to get Luke Skywalker and Darth Vader. It'll make it a little bit easier
right.
to get it.
I mean,
so it's not so playing for 60, 70 hours, you know.
Right. Now, they said these were only cosmetic, but it also sounded, well, that's what they said, but when we were discussing it initially, there was power-up cards in there as well that could definitely turn the tide of the battle.
Sure.
At least with Overwatch, and I don't agree with it, but it truly is only cosmetic.
Then that's fine.
In Overwatch.
And if that becomes something part of an eventual bill, maybe that's something that can be put into an eventual state or federal bill where it's like, you cannot gain a competitive advantage and sell it for whatever amount of money. You know what I mean? Like, maybe that's something they can work in.
Yeah. In Overwatch, there is no competitive advantage to their loot boxes, which I think is the only benefit. What drives me nuts about Overwatch is that what does feed into the buy aspect of it is that... You good?
Go ahead. My computer power's off.
Oh, okay, but we're still recording. Okay, so the only thing is they have limited seasonal costumes.
Limited!
That are only available for like a month at a time. And a lot of them they do not put back up. Or if they do, they don't tell you that they're ever going to put them back up. So people will just pound that buy button throughout the month to try to get the limited costume for their favorite character.
Oh, that's, yeah, that's kind of dirty.
Yeah, so that's where I do
that,
take that issue.
That should be regulated, too.
Yeah, exactly. Like, even if you put it up for sale for you can put it up for sale for a stupid amount of money after that period, I feel like there has to be a loophole in there where you can get it after that limited period. I mean, otherwise people are going to spend hundreds on trying to get a stupid costume.
Sure.
Within 30 days. And I know people who have done that and still never got that costume.
They spent at least $100 to get a fucking costume in a game.
Yeah, and some people never got it.
And how do they feel afterwards? They feel stupid? Or like...
Just, I mean, let down, yeah.
Well, at some point, you have to watch your own finances. But if you're a 10-year-old, I can understand that you have less impulse control over that. And plus, it's not your money. It's daddy's money. It's magic. Credit's magic. It's not real money. It's not real cash. It's not quarters you're putting into the gumball machine at the pizza place, right?
Right.
So, all right. Well, we'll see what happens. But this is the first start. I think this is going to catch on more and more. As it's not, you know, it's not whether or not we know about it. It's whether or not people in power know about it. And there's going to be some altruistic people that want to pass it to help gamers and children and consumers. Some will use it for political gain, like some probably did with the ERSB in the 90s. But either way, it's going to grow eventually, this sort of backlash publicly. It'll happen. It just takes time for it to get into the public eye more and more, besides us on the video game scene. So, Ian, at SoCal Retro Gaming Expo, we discussed Nintendo Labo. You remember that great conversation? There were punches thrown, some hair grabbing. It was fun.
Yeah, so much.
But we're gonna transition to our great conversation. The audio is going to be different. We didn't have these nice warm mics there. It'll be fine. We're going to transition there now.
So we're having a great time here. We just had a podcast come out about a week ago, a little less than a week ago. But there's been stuff that's happened in the news, including in Nintendo Labo.
Yes, indeed.
Interesting. This is Nintendo going after the educational market, the STEM sort of market, which has risen probably the past 8-9 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, science, technology, engineering, math. Did I miss anything out of STEM? Is that it? Is that even right? Do I even know what I'm talking about? Is that what STEM stands for? Yeah, I think you're right.
Excellent.
So we can put the screen up on here. We can show everyone what you get with Nintendo Labo. What is Nintendo Labo? Nintendo Labo combines the magic of Nintendo Switch, the magic, with the fun of do-it-yourself creations. Start with a piece of cardboard. Build a 13-key piano, a fishing pole, even a motorbike. Add your Nintendo Switch console to power it up. Hold the recital, catch a fish, win a race. With Nintendo Labo, building is just as fun as playing. Have fun discovering how it all works. You might even invent new ways to play with each Toy-Con creation. So, what do you get with it? Well, you get a laser-cut cardboard with instructions how to put it together. You get the software, which is probably instructions and mini-games to use your creations. And there you go. You have a motorbike right there. That's actually pretty cool, I have to admit. I like that. Then there's also, the robot jetpack with, like, arms and legs moving around, like, or not jetpack, just a, battery pack.
You'd probably look pretty cute as a robot.
I would. And you can customize your creations. You can draw it. And you had a Guy Fieri-looking motorcycle handlebar going on there.
No, bad.
Or you can have the
donkey sauce. Who calls their sauce donkey sauce?
Guy Fieri, that's who. So, and then you have a cute little insect-looking thing there that they drew. And so first impressions, I thought, were mostly positive on social media. It was trending. People were, like, mostly positive. This is a cool idea for kids. They're going to have something to do in school, potentially, with this. This is something that teachers in a science class will buy tomorrow. They're like, this is something like, oh, my God, this could make learning fun.
Does
it
make sense? April.
I know, but they can still pre-order. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying in theory they'd buy tomorrow. So you got to put up with. So there's going to be two available, correct? One at $69.99.
Yeah, one at $79.99.
The robot one, the giant robot one, is going to be $80.
Yeah.
And then the normal one, the fishing pole, piano, motorbike one, is the cheaper one, correct?
Yeah, Toy-Con set one is the $69 one, $70. And I think that's actually the far more interesting one. People love the way the robot one looks, but it's a one-trick pony. For $69.99, you get the six toy controllers. That's six projects. I think people who think that this is overpriced aren't necessarily thinking about...
If they think it's overpriced, they've never bought something like this before, a do-it-yourself kit, probably.
Perhaps. So, I look at it this way. You look at a package of mini games that Nintendo is putting out. you figure they're not going to sell that for less than $49.99. That's $50.
Less than $60 at this point. Probably.
If you go buy a quality, I don't know, anyone in here Papercraft? Papercraft is fun. If you go and you buy a set of six nice Papercraft projects, it's probably going to run you about $15 to $20. These are heavier cardboard. It's not like Nintendo's cutting you a discount here, but I don't think they're particularly overcharging, especially on the Toy-Con pack. If I were to buy this and take it home, back to Buffalo, and say, do this with my niece over the course of a week, I would consider that money well spent. You know, spending time with family, you're going to have fun with it, and, you know, if they use it afterwards, great. But I think one of the other things is, I think the cardboard is really only the beginning of what we're going to see with Labo. I think within 6 months, we're going to start seeing 3D printing. I think we're going to start seeing custom builds. I think we're going to start seeing a lot of creativity that goes beyond cardboard.
You mean from the mass market or from other vendors, at third-party companies that will pump these out?
No, I just mean people who get into this.
People get into it and said, like, I want a piano that's not cardboard, maybe it's plastic.
When you start talking about, you know, people who are going to maybe use this in STEM curriculum, you know, I mean, you forget, well, maybe we forget, you know, that high schools have a lot more technology than they did when you and I were in high school. You know, a lot of high schools have multiple 3D printers.
What rich school did you go to? I didn't have that. What are you talking about?
No, neither did I. I said, wow.
Oh, that's what my tax money's going to, 3D printers? All right.
You want kids to learn technology or no? So a lot of high schools have this. I could see that being a big thing as part of a STEM program. And then
that makes sense.
Evolve beyond the cardboard and the possible construction.
I guess it also depends upon how open-ended this software could potentially be. So maybe there'll be a crafting program built in where it'll be like, okay, try to build your own little thing. You know, what if you build your own little knock off of what we have, and almost like Lego said, yeah, you can follow the instructions, but you can also go off on your own and build something eventually. And then maybe I'm harkening back to all the awful cheap Wii controller contraptions you used to see in the store, like all the freaking bowling balls and the tennis rackets and the baseball bats. What if those same companies want to make money? What if they come up with something to spin off on this to help kids create in some way? So it actually be useful junk, and not just junk, that'll evolve from this. Because if it makes money, you're going to have third parties in China pumping this crap out. They'll come out with their own cardboard laser-cut designs, potentially, if it can be worked in. They'll come out with their own plastic contraptions to snap on. You know, I think the sky could be the limit for something like this if more and more people get it. If this is a true hit, this will explode. In my opinion, I think this would be something that explodes. This will be like the hottest, not just like video game apparatus, but maybe just general toy item for a certain age demographic. Does that make sense? Is that possible? You see that? Like, this is so early that we don't know entirely where this could go yet. We don't know what game companies are going to adapt something like technology like this. Because now all of a sudden you have something where you have all these game companies go, why didn't we think of that? Like, why didn't we think of building a contraption that could come with the game for whatever purpose? You know,
you want to know why I'm really actually excited about this? Perhaps a return of Sega Bass Fishing.
Oh, Sega Bass Fishing.
That's really what I'm most excited about, is I want to build the fishing rod and then make the colors accurate to the Sega Bass Fishing rod, and then I want to fish. That's what I want to do. Oh, and I also want to make this keyboard.
What do you think when you hear people say, well, it's not going to be that durable, this cardboard, or it's going to break down over time?
Well, cardboard, if folded properly, is actually extremely durable. And sure, it probably will break down over time. Nintendo said that the templates will be up to print. Who's got that kind of printer? Well, libraries, if you have a big library.
They can print out cardboard with the dotted lines on it to fold?
I mean, or you can hope you have a steady hand and use scissors. And if you can't print that, then I'm sure you can just print it on paper and trace it and cut it. Some of these things, you know, they're using reflective tape, you know, to bounce around the infrared beam. So I'm sure there's ways, you know, you just go to Home Depot or Lowe's or whatever going to roll a reflective tape.
But either way, I'm sure
Nintendo is working on a way to make sure that these can be replaced.
Not Nintendo. Again, third parties will just
take the design
and say, okay, you broke your robot kit. Here it is for $4.99 on eBay or whatever. That will pop up if this is popular enough. Like, there'll be no worries about replacements. I can almost guarantee you. The market will figure that out, in my opinion, if it's popular enough. Someone will come in to fulfill that need for that. So that, to me, is not a concern. That's going to happen at some point.
Oh, the motorcycle reminds me of Hang On. So
exactly. It has a pedal.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. This is why I like it, too, though. I think it's charming as hell to have a cardboard controller. And, like, again, harken back to all the PS2 days you got to buy the giant steering wheel and the shifter and all the heavy metal pedals. And then what do you do with that? Where do you store all that? It becomes garbage in the long run.
Well, plus, it's
a lot more money.
Right.
Versus cardboard.
This is cheaper. My biggest concern, though, is actually where do you store
cardboard?
All of this.
Have you seen my garage? It is stacks and boxes of stuff.
That's not the example you want to use, Patrick.
Okay, but cardboard's storable. It's stackable. You can break it down.
How many times?
I don't know. Boxes, you can use tape on boxes, you know? You get the tape gun. I thought you were a cardboard proponent. Now you're anti-cardboard.
No, I mean, I'm pro-cardboard.
Turning into Secret Hitler Cardboard Edition? So this is turning into?
I'm just saying that there is the issue of space.
Space with cardboard.
Jesus Christ, it still takes up space. It doesn't matter.
Cardboard is thin. You can stack
it. So you're going to rebuild these every time?
Not every time, but say after a couple months, your kid wants to put it away.
You're the fascist.
You put away Legos.
I would.
You don't keep Legos in giant castles. You break it down. You put it into a box.
How many people build a Lego set and then immediately break it down?
I didn't say immediately.
That's not a lot
of people. I said like 2 months. And you get tired of it, and your adventure of Link cartridge finally arrives from Sears in April, and you've been crying every day watching the UPS truck drive by past your house. I got graphic.
All right,
but the whole point is that this is better, Ian.
Yes, than having $80 steering wheel.
That $80 steering wheel
that I have to give away for free at Luna because I'm never going to bother trying to trade.
I'm thinking about Ian's job 20 years from now and how much easier it'll be thanks to Nintendo Labo. That's what I thing. That's where he disagrees. He's leaving. He's like, no, you guys are off on this. That guy's like, nope, this isn't for me, Labo. Speaking of that, the collector response to Nintendo Labo and overall general this isn't for me attitude has been kind of disheartening and disappointing more so than surprising. Like, if you're a 30-year-old, 40-year-old, you're a single guy, you're a collector, you're not into this, you don't have kids, yeah, you can say, yeah, I'm not interested in this. That doesn't mean that swaths of other groups of people won't be interested in this and that it shouldn't exist just because you don't like it and think it should exist. Doesn't mean it shouldn't exist for other people. And that's sort of the weirdest reaction I've seen to this.
Yeah.
Like, oh, this is too much money. Kids aren't going to be able to afford $80. I don't remember buying my own Lego sets when I was 10. I didn't do that. My parents did that. My parents were buying me all the goodies I got on Christmas, my birthday party. So the price is not an issue.
You didn't do your own Christmas shopping?
Little Pat with his bar, Toys R Us, buy my own Lego. Lego sets, who here had Lego sets in like the late 80s, early 90s? Do you remember that they were more expensive than NES games? A lot of them were, the big sets.
My goodness, my brother had like the first big castle, my younger brother.
Yeah.
And I mean, that was like the only Christmas gift he got.
Yes.
That shit was like $100.
Yes, and that's late 80s money. So this is not that expensive, especially, again, when you look into educational, you know, craft things that are out there, project. So you go into – I haven't been to one of these STEM workshop places where you can buy your own things. I imagine they're not all cheap. Anyway.
Projects, tests, rubrics, that sort of thing.
Yeah. The Radio Shack old kits. Remember the Radio Shack ones? Those were – some were cheap, but some were expensive back then. There was a gradation.
You're coming dangerously close to me lamenting the death of Radio Shack. So
I wanted to buy the employee shirt off their back.
Shit.
Okay, so we're gonna be very sad now about the death of Radio Shack. There's some still around. Anyway, Ian,
yeah?
To those collectors out there who don't, or just gamers that don't like this, what would you say to them?
I guess I don't really want to get my blood pressure up.
You don't get your blood pressure up personally or over them?
I mean, it's really nothing different than what you said. So don't buy it.
Let kids have fun, you old curmudgeon. That's what I would say.
What I hope here is if those people really don't want it, I hope they really don't buy it and don't just say that and then go out and buy one and keep it sealed and try to hold on to it like a collector's item. I hope this actually gets in the hands of people who want to use it.
Yeah, and it's not marketed towards adults. These are all children and preteens that are using this stuff.
No. I mean, it's kind of marketed towards me.
It's marketed towards you? Will you get the robot? Will we fight it out, robot style?
I have no interest in the robot one.
No, that's my interest. I'm thinking Iron Man add-ons and stuff like that. No.
So for the first time ever, you're more childish than me.
First time ever?
Well, maybe. No, but
have you heard about my love for Friendly's ice cream? This is the first time you're hearing about it.
No, all right. Never mind.
All right. Just by applause here, who, if they're not going to get it for themselves, will either get this for like a niece or daughter or son or a cousin or someone? By applause.
Check, dog.
All right, that's like 30% of the audience, maybe 35%, and the rest of the audience has no soul. Because they don't enjoy the magic of childhood creation. Kids can learn how stuff works. Come on, guys.
But that is one other thing I wanted to point out that I think people miss is every step of the way when you're building these on the Switch screen, they explain to you how it's working. They show you how it's working. You have to test it at every step of the stage.
Oh, yeah, sure. You test it every stage. That's really cool.
So they actually, at least for the kids who are using it, they are literally teaching you how the technology works as you are making it. So
sure.
I do think that's very interesting and educational.
And Sony and Microsoft would have never done this or thought of it. What did someone say? This is the most Nintendo thing ever. And it is.
Or if they did, we were joking.
Outside the box thinking?
Hey, good times elbow.
Yeah.
We were joking last night in the car. If Microsoft did it, there would have been a lot of dubstep music. The first kit would have been make your own. How many young children in this room?
Okay, that's on 18 and over.
Make your own fuckable bazooka.
That would have been the Microsoft
version. That would have been the first Microsoft kit.
And the Sony version just would have been this, but just cheesier and
would have been dry. It was real dry and boring, like a packet of saltine crackers. And I love Sony systems, so it's not a fan.
They just would have missed the mark entirely. They would have went for like, what would college kids want to put together? What would they make in their dorm room? It just totally just missed the point of it entirely.
So we would have gotten a Bob Marley tapestry?
Maybe. Your own sofa seat? Do-it-yourself kit? I don't know.
Alright.
So I think this is great. I don't know how many, by the way, I don't know with that robot suit, how many Joy-Cons are being used there? Like seven? There's like one on his feet, on his back, and then on his face. It looks like that's going to be nutty. All right. So that's all we have on this topic. This is going to be a huge seller right there. I predict it'll be a huge seller.
Yeah.
Ian kind of agrees.
No, I do.
All right. So
we'll see how much steam it carries later on. If they get more creative, how many more packs they release.
Yeah, I mean, the sky could be the limit. What's going to prevent other third parties from doing their own, using this, figuring out, oh, these Joy-Cons, now we have spatial placement we can do things with. Oh, we didn't think of that until Nintendo showed us. And that could be a thing.
I think you're just a touch more enthusiastic there.
Oh, that's rare then. You should give me credit, Ian. My enthusiasm, I'm old. I'm a curmudgeon myself. All right.
That was very insightful, Ian. I loved your point at 2:43 into the conversation.
Yeah, here's
about the corrugated cardboard history.
Yeah, you had great points as well.
So that's gonna be fun. That Labo thing.
Yes.
At SoCal Retro Gaming Expo, Ian, while we were there, we talked about another topic. We talked about the Sony Totaku Amiibo-like figures.
I'm very excited for the Fizar one. You can hear how excited I am for it.
Right
now.
Now. Now.
Now.
Speaking of Sony and potential knockoffs, we have the we have this, Ian. Let's see. Is this the right video? The Totaku collection. We have, there it is, everyone. And that's the reaction we're getting. Little Big Planet figurine, maybe not. It's a.
I want that. I am buying
the Wipeout old school crab, Crash Bandicoot. It's the Sonibo collection. I'll dub it. There, I was the first one to say it. Tekken 7. You got. He's still kicking. I don't know how he's still fighting. He's like 90 years old. You got Bloodborne. Okay, so this is the first one, 6 announced. And we have Parappa the Rapper. The only one people will probably buy, besides Ian buying the Wipeout.
Yeah.
Probably.
I mean, as many of them as I can get my hand on.
He's just going to buy all of them.
I'm going to fill a bathtub with them and roll around.
It'll be the Rosalina scandal all over again from a couple years ago when the guy bought 100 of them.
I mean, no one else is going to buy them.
All right, so PlayStation themed amiibo type figurines, collectible figurines.
But they're not. I realize how this looks.
Sony's only licensing their characters, they're not actually distributing. Okay.
Sony's licensing the stuff, they're not making it. Think Geek is making them. They're gonna be GameStop exclusives. They look like amiibo because they're roughly the same size. But they actually have no NFC capabilities at all. There's no tie-in to the games. They're just little collectible figurines. So they are trying to cash in, I think, on the collectability of it, but they're not. It's not a direct copycat because it's missing any sort of
interactivity. Besides right. you battling it out on your old train board your dad made.
Yeah.
Put away. So I took up all the room of the computer room upstairs when it was hot in the summer. About 89 degrees and always with humidity. What? I'm sorry. I went to somewhere else for a second. Anyway.
Somewhere else.
Okay. So you don't want to rip into this too much? Or is it not even worth the effort?
It's harmless, man.
It's harmless. What? Okay. Is there a market? Is there honestly a market for these? Do you think these will sell?
No. I mean, okay. I think Sackboy could sell. I think Parappa will definitely sell. And Crash will sell.
As a whole, though, the idea, because they're all from different franchises, you know, they're not in a unified cinematic video game universe like they are with Nintendo, more so.
I mean, I think there's fans enough fans of all these properties that honestly they probably could sell. The Bloodborne character is definitely going to sell. The Hunter will sell. Crash Bandicoot? Everyone loves Crash. Yeah, Crash.
No, not everyone likes Crash Bandicoot. I still am annoyed he was harassing people in Nintendo's parking lot back in, like, 95. I'm not forgetting that. That was some Logan Paul bullshit he was doing back then. Piece of shit. Fuck you, Crash Bandicoot. Is there any kids here? I'm sorry. Crash Bandicoot was the Logan Paul of the PlayStation era. There, I said it. There.
He was a little bit more charming. A lot more charming.
A bit more talent.
Logan Paul has all the charm of a wench. Turd.
You're censoring yourself and I'm still turd.
I think that's like the first time I've ever censored.
So I'm actually kind of shocked to see the Wipeout.
Oh. It just makes me so goddamn happy.
But it's almost like we have to harken back to the early PlayStation days. What do we have? What can we choose from?
They didn't go all the way back. Wipeout is still being made and it's just now getting a VR patch.
Alright, then fuck me then. Okay.
No. No, I will not.
I would have preferred if they started with, like, take one game, do multiple Parappa characters instead. Do, like, 5 or 6 of those. And then continue from there.
Maybe they'll see what sells. Maybe Wipeout will sell really well, and I'll get all the teams.
Maybe that will never happen. But we'll see. We'll come back a year from now to see what happens with that.
You love to crush my dreams.
You were crushing my Labo dreams before. I can crush your knockoff Sonibo.
I just tempered your out of control enthusiasm.
I don't think it was out of control, my expectations. I think they were very.
It was out of control.
No, sir. We don't need any editing. And this is why there's no live audience week to week, because we don't need people taking sides here with this stuff. We don't need that. We don't need any input from the Peanut Gallery, as my dad would say. Is that from Peanuts, the Peanut Gallery?
No.
It's not.
People ask me that all the time.
All the time?
No. And like literally, it's like, oh, it's a Peanuts reference. I'm like, no, it's not. But like, oh, there's a Peanuts reference in this video. I'm like, where? I'm like, oh, Peanut Gallery. I'm like, nope, that's not a Peanuts reference.
Anyway, so what would be you're a Sony fanboy? What would be the next 6 to follow this?
Sony fanboy.
Would obviously you want to do some sort of God of War thing.
God of War fellow.
Uncharted fellow.
Uncharted.
Nathan Drake.
Nathan Drake.
Boop, boop, boop.
We're running out of exclusives.
Last of Us fellows.
Destruction Derby car. what else is out there?
Yeah. Spyro? Wait, yeah, no, that could be me.
Are these exclusives, all these?
Yeah, Spyro is not. Is? No.
No.
There's on the G. Oh, yeah, Ratchet and Clank. That's
well, then, I mean, tech is not exclusive, so I guess it doesn't fuck. Then it's not really Sony, then, at that point.
I mean, that's a character that people associate with Sony, though.
I don't. What? Why?
Because I always have.
I guess. Okay, you're right. That was the first console it was on, so I guess. All
right, well, I think I'm done talking about these.
All right, it's nothing to get worried about, obviously.
Nothing to get worried about.
Oh.
Why would... In what situation would these be something to get worried about?
I don't know, Ian. You just have had a Rosalina scandal about buying up all the Parappa figures. I want to make sure that never happens. I don't want you to be a scumbag seller.
No, Pfizer figures.
Do you think it being a GameStop exclusive will hurt
the draw? Yeah, it is a GameStop exclusive.
But that'll hurt the draw versus it builds every Toys R Us and Electronic OT that doesn't exist anymore.
A bad magician
software. Yeah, we're old. All right, this is fine. The Parappa one's kind of cute because it's more like 2D-ish, I guess. There's some charm there. So that's it. We're running out of steam.
Ian was very excited for the Pfizer.
Wipeout
little
ship.
Racing
yep.
craft thing. I was excited to go grab a burrito upstairs after the panel was over in the green room.
Yeah.
No, it was Italian on Sundays. I got some nice chicken cutlet.
Yeah, that's right.
I am starving right now. But thanks so much if you came out and, you know. Yeah. All right, moving on, Ian. Stamps,
yep.
Stamps.com. These days, you can get just about anything online and on demand. Did you know that you can even get postage on demand with Stamps.com? Well, you can with Stamps.com. You can print real U.S. postage for any letter or any package right from your home or office. All 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, when it's convenient to you, for you. Stamps.com will even send you a digital scale so you can weigh your letters and packages and print the exact amount of postage every time. I've used Stamps.com even for years to mail out CU Podcast shirts, Frank shirts, DVDs. It's extremely convenient. Right from your home.
For a home great. Business, I imagine you can't beat it.
It's fantastic. Plus you get a nice rate that's cheaper from if you went out and got postage elsewhere. It's easy to use. You click, you print, you mail, and you're done. Stamps.com is such a no-brainer. I print out the labels. I slap it on. You're finished. Stamps.com will save you so much time. You can access all the services of the post office right from your desk. It's never been easier to send out your letters and packages. Here at the CU Podcast, we are really busy. We rely on Stamps.com to print out shipping labels so we can send out all our goodies in the mail. It couldn't be easier.
Spike's getting better at it.
Spike's getting better. He's using it for you. You're telling him how to send out the buttons and great boxes. All right, so... you can get a free trial with Stamps.com. Here's an offer. You get a 4-week trial with postage and a digital scale without any long-term commitments. You can cancel at any time. Go to Stamps.com, click on the microphone at the top of the page, and type in CU Podcast. Microphone at the top of the page, and tell them that the CU Podcast sent you with code CU Podcast at Stamps.com. Ian!
Sir.
This has been a weird topic that I first heard about in the summer of 2017, where it was almost comical in a sense about, all right, we got this Activision Atari game from like fucking 35 years ago.
Dragster.
Where you have a record. It's a short game. If you ever played the game, it's a drag race and it's short. It should be over in less than 10 seconds, the game.
Yep.
I mean, that's all it is. So it's technically a pretty sound game for what it is.
And it's fun. I've
you
played
know?
It. Yeah.
You got to watch your clutch. You shift into different gears, and you can race a second player. So there was another word kerfuffle again about I think it was the record. It's the Guinness World Records longest running video game record,
right? Exactly.
Which was for Dragster, set by Todd Rogers at 5.51 seconds. So last summer, you had little murmurings about people trying to dispute this, saying, well, we don't know if it's technically possible to garner a score that low or a time that low. And this has been even certified in Guinness Book of World Records as this is, and even certified by Activision that this is a world record.
for this.
Right. I mean, a lot of these older games, and probably a lot of newer games too, depending on which ones you're playing, there is an absolute score you can get. There's only so far you can get.
Well, for a time game like this,
yes,
that would make perfect sense.
Exactly.
This isn't necessarily a high score where you can keep going forever, like Pac-Man, until you lose lives. This is,
well, there is a perfect score for Pac-Man too.
Sure, but you see what I'm saying, though.
Yes.
But for a timed game, there's only as low as you can possibly go. So when you hear about these old scores and old records, you have to think about back in the day, how did they verify them?
Usually Polaroids. Like, if you read the back of Atari manuals, especially Activision, specifically states Polaroid.
But you have to think about who was involved with verifying them and keeping the records. So this was input into Twin Galaxies for so long, which was the keeper of the flame, so to speak, of the original, professional gaming scores, the whole famous King of Khan thing with Billy Mitchell and all that. This is what they're known for, Twin Galaxies. It's a name synonymous with video game records, especially in the classic gaming age. So what's interesting, though, is that when this originally came up in July, when I first heard about it, I just thought it was kind of curious. There wasn't much movement, but it seemed the games gained steam over months and months and months. People on Twin Galaxies were then publicly disputing it, because you can do that on Twin Galaxies. It used to be only, I think, officially referees would decide. Now it's a peer review system of scores, and that happened with the buyout in 2014. I think they changed it then, or gradually changed it. I'm not totally familiar, but they did change how it worked. So this record by Todd Rogers came under dispute, because there was a speedrunner named OmniGamer that, yes, went and basically with the tool assist, try to go frame by frame to see what is actually the lowest possible time for Dragster. And right, guess what? It wasn't 5.51. It was 5.57 was the lowest he could get.
Right.
So at that point, it became, okay, something might at least be going on here, and let's investigate further. But it seemed at the time, Twin Galaxies didn't care originally, the summer of last year, or they ignored it, which I thought was curious. They didn't really respond right away. So then I think more and more people started looking into this, like, oh, what's going on? What's going on with this?
Right. This is curious. What I also thought was interesting was, when the speedrunner started using a tool-assisted speedrun to try to, break 5.57, I believe it was Todd Rogers who responded with, well, there's, multiple ways you can play the game in a tool-assisted speed, with tools, it's not going to, account for all the ways you can play it, but no, it is. I mean, a tool-assisted speedrun is designed to find the quickest way from A to B.
Sure.
So,
it's impossible for a human to do better than a tool-assisted run.
Right.
Because they're looking at every scenario, every frame of the way, and calculating out the different possibilities at that point in time.
Right. It's designed to take into account all the potential ways you could do this.
Sure. And for a game like Dragster, there's a much more finite number of choices, because when you shift to a different gear and things of that nature, so you can play out all the different scenarios a lot easier.
Correct.
And I think OmniGamer did a whole database of that. Well, if you shift at this point in time, this is where you'll get this point in time. So this is actually, there's actually a finite number of choices in a game like this to get to that lower score. It's actually not infinite. It can become looking like infinite when you stretch it out, but you're still limited. You're limited to what you can possibly do with this. So this whole story has taken some twists and turns about. There was an article put out in Twin Galaxies that was very strange. I think it was like January 23rd that pointed out the controversy, but then kind of defended Todd Rogers, and they even quoted David Crane, who said in his opinion he thinks Todd Rogers actually got the 5.51. So my issue with that, though, is this, is that if Twin Galaxies is the keeper of these scores, they shouldn't be weighing in on them,
right,
or trying to persuade or move the public opinion, especially by going,
and getting David Crane, who, for all intents and purposes, you know, he's like, yeah, why should I disbelieve this guy? Maybe he probably did it back then. It's not a big deal. So it's kind of using his star power, so to speak, to their own advantage, which I think is kind of slimy.
Yeah.
The more I think about it.
But the other thing is, you know, I met David Crane briefly, a nice guy, but
very nice guy.
My position is very simple. The high scores published by Activision in the 1980s were authenticated using the established methods at the time by the governing authority at the time. I have no doubts then or now that Todd Rogers achieved the scores attributed to him, provided the necessary corroborating evidence to support those scores and earn the right to be named world champion by the accepted validating authority. Sorry that I can't provide anything more concrete than my opinion. At the time, the validating methods at the time were extremely primitive. And the original Polaroid no longer exists. And everyone said that it was smudged right where the evidence necessary,
the score, the
yeah,
time,
yeah, would really be necessary. Everyone says that it was, you know, potential, smudged over the last digit, and a 4 smudged properly is going to look like a 1. I mean, look at a numeral 1 and look at a numeral 4. You smudge that, right? It's going to look.
But Activision claimed back then they could do a 5.54, but no one now could even do it.
Activision claims he could do a 5.54. Rogers is stating the record is 5.51.
Yes.
Even if you could do a 5.54 in the game counts in point threes or .03s.
0.03s. 300ths of a second.
That's one tick better technically than what anyone else has achieved, even though other people have there was two other people who claimed it but never really provided evidence. That's one tick better than what everyone else claims is the maximum, but still one tick away from what Todd Rogers is claiming is his best score.
Sure.
So, I mean, that still doesn't prove anything.
Yeah. Again, these are all records from the early 80s, and when you have this new entity rising up in order to capture, at the time, there was no such thing as professional gaming, really. I mean, it was just starting to come about. So you had this new entity saying, we're going to be the ones that are going to keep all these scores and do it. You don't know how that's going to shape out. Who's going to join that organization in the 80s? If it's going to be clean, what accountability is there back then? And those are questions that are coming out now. And for something like this, where, okay, you can't prove there's no evidence of a 5.51 score. Now, what does that call into question? Does it just call into question his other scores, which we'll get into? Or does it call into question a league of other scores from back then, too?
I mean, it very well could.
And I think that's maybe why they were afraid to move on this originally.
Yes.
Because now the entirety of the integrity of Twin Galaxies, I believe, is called into question.
Oh, so do I. And I think a lot of it is it was... I mean, let's look at it this way. You know, a lot of these records that they're talking about, especially the ones like that Todd Rogers held, and, you know, we'll get into this. His record was debunked, expunged, and all of his other records were cleared out, and we'll get into why shortly. But I don't think anyone realized that this was going to be taken this seriously in the future. I think that this was kind of an old boys club.
Absolutely.
In the back.
Yeah.
Definitely an old boys
it's
club.
It's a click.
It was a click. I think they all looked out for each other's backs. Mm-hmm. And let's not forget that in the late 70s, early 80s, especially if you look into the arcade scene, it wasn't exactly... It was seedy. I mean, we talk about that on the video game years. You know, arcades became more family-friendly in the mid to, you know, late 80s, but in the late 70s and the early 80s, they weren't. It was a place where, you know, teenagers and, you know, young adults got together. And this was a boys club. And Todd Rogers was part of Twin Galaxies.
That's the strange part about it. You have a situation where Todd Rogers, who was publicly like the rock, one of the earliest sort of rock stars of the of the arcade gaming scene. He's in magazines. He's publicly recognized.
He's being invited out to party with the members of Activision.
Sure. So you have maybe around him, you have this. See, I wasn't around then, meaning a little younger. But maybe you have others glomming on, and maybe others say, oh, I want to be like that too. We can all get world records, and you know, arcade gaming was coming the hottest thing ever in the early 80s. So maybe that there was this maelstrom of, not, I don't want to say dishonesty, but getting caught up in this. And then, hey, if we fudge a score, who cares? Who's really going to know? Who's going to check it? There's no one to check it. We're the people. We hold it. No one else does. There's no accountability. There's no higher. We're the highest Twin Galaxy. There's no one above us.
Right. We're the powers that be.
Yeah. So we can control our own destiny. But I think, though, is that once that happens, it takes a long time for that power to be taken away from the original guard.
Yes.
You know, the old guard 35 years ago. And when you have, was it Jace Hall bought in 2014? Maybe he didn't know, or the other people that helped now didn't know the lengths of the bad or incorrect records from 35 years ago. Because who the fuck would fake some of these or want to defraud about Dragster?
I mean,
on the 2600.
I feel like with the modern verification record methods and stuff, I have a feeling Twin Galaxies now, I feel like the records are probably something you, for modern games, modern records set, they're probably fine. But yes,
because there's all evidence of them.
Right. Now. But any record that was set without verifiable evidence that we can still look back on, in a lot of those early records, you know, that may not have been beat, I feel, you know, you have to take them with a grain of salt. You have to look at them in question now.
Absolutely. Because this isn't, to me, this is at least in the realm of, like, not possibility in terms of, well, we know it's impossible. But at the time, they thought, well, 5.51 was possible. It's only 300ths of a second less than what Activision did. So, this is a miracle guy. You know what I mean?
Or this seems like a reasonable fudge that we can get away with.
But when you start to look at some of these other
scores
from Todd Rogers,
you're
like, really? No one questioned this at all. Really? Everyone just took this guy as a, not just a gaming god, a literal god for performing, you know, above and beyond what everyone else did.
What's the Intellivision Donkey Kong score? Or
was
Atari?
Was like a million? Where is it?
It's like double. I think the Centipede one is like double what the other player, the other record was.
When you look at some of these scores from Todd Rogers that they're getting rid of, and I wish I had them all in front of me right now, but they are insane.
Some were double the second place score.
Some were 10 times.
Some,
like, no one could come close.
Some ended in numerals, like some would end in like 60 or 70 when the game only ever scored in 50 or 0. So it would be impossible for that score to ever be scored. And even then, I mean, people dragged their feet on
barnstorming,
expunging this.
Barnstorming, it was removed even before all this. It was discovered it was impossible to achieve even when all the obstacles were removed. So in barnstorming, you're playing ultra speed when you go up and down, right?
Yeah.
So I guess they must have went in an emulator and just removed all the barns and obstacles and said, okay, we'll just run it straight and see what happens. And the score was still impossible. So they removed that. At that point, wouldn't it tell you that something's fucking fishy with this guy's scores?
Yeah.
And then go back and look at all of them? Why would you then protect the other scores? I know there was that famous case, not famous, but there was that one of the GoldenEye speedruns. They discovered the guy was cheating on one of them because I remember at the beginning of the cutscene, like, there was a weapon or something in his hand that shouldn't have been there. So they said, okay, this was a cheat.
Gotcha.
So even if some of the other ones were, even if some of the other records were legit, they said, fuck them, they're all wiped, and that's it. And that takes care of it.
Right.
They should have done that immediately before it even got to this point. And then said, okay.
Yeah, I mean, one cheat should, and that should amount to immediate disqualification if you want.
Zero tolerance.
If you want to try to preserve the
integrity
of, anything that you stand for, in this case, the high scores, you need to eliminate that stuff in the bud and then immediately kind of look into everything else.
Here's
Go
one.
Go through your other records. Do you have the actual proof for this? No. Eliminate it.
Let's see. According to this article, his NES Donkey Kong score was eliminated because there was no evidence they could find for it.
He had high scores in skiing, Stampede, Grand Prix. Oh, yeah. He had a 65 million point score in Centipede.
Yeah, no.
65 million. What are you playing for, 3 weeks straight?
Yeah.
Like how are you getting that high up? Is that, I mean, when you looked at them, because they're now all gone from Twin Galaxies, but there was one, I wish I knew which one, I remember when I was looking. There was one that, I think it was one of the Donkey Kong ones. Maybe it was the Intellivision one or whatever. It was the second place was by a factor of not even two or three. It was like a factor of like 100 times less. Like it wasn't even, it didn't seem
really
feasible.
I thought it was just double, but still.
There was one that didn't look feasible at the time. Maybe I'm getting it wrong, but they didn't pass the smell test when you looked at them.
Well, and if I'm not mistaken, it was because he was allowed to input some of these records and no one just ever double checked it.
Well, that sounds good.
Or he knew someone who was inputting records.
Oh, like a convicted pedophile.
Oh, right.
Forgot to mention that.
Whoops. Yeah, forgot all about that one.
Yeah. Not even alleged, convicted.
Actually, I didn't forget about that. We were just waiting to drop that.
Yeah, forgot about that. Very strange situation. I think the public pressure got Twin Galaxies to finally say, okay, let's do this. They even asked Ben Heck to get involved. They had Todd Rogers and Ben Heck do it. Ben Heck basically duplicated what OmniGamer did.
Yeah.
With his own hardware setup. And had Todd Rogers awkwardly on film. Did you see these?
No.
You didn't see that?
No. I mean, that's cringeworthy. I don't know.
This all happened in the past like 5 weeks. So they have.
I kept up on the news. I did not watch the Ben Heck video. I really should.
Yeah, I think Jace Hall got in touch with Ben Heck and said, "This is. Wouldn't you be interested in doing this?" And at first, I think Ben didn't care until he's like, "Oh, I can build a hardware setup to try to do this and still input it on the computer." But
of course, as soon as Ben can build something, he's going to want to do it.
But there was a video put out by Apollo Legends only on January 23rd. It already has 1.5 million views and calls him the biggest cheater in gaming history. And subtitle, 1,700 plus scores with no evidence. So if it's only 1,700, that's insane. All I know is that when I saw the barnstorming one, and then the Donkey Kong one.
The Centipede one. Was
and the
really,
Centipede one, yeah. Which is like. Oh yeah, here's the, and then on the video you can see the picture of the fake stain on the picture of barnstorming where like it's
oh
like,
it's bar okay it was yeah. Barnstorming that had the stain, not Dragster. Yeah, my yeah. Bad.
So okay, but what's disheartening though is I really hope, but my feeling is that Twin Galaxies sort of played in on this drama to get exposure. Because before this, have you thought about Twin Galaxies at all?
I actually have more than. You might think, but I mean,
most people
probably not know.
So I think they try to capitalize on it.
Sure.
And I think this hurts them though, because they should have just squashed it right away. Said, okay, we're suspending him at least until we investigate all of it, instead of letting.
Yeah,
this
is one of those cases where not all publicity is good publicity at all.
Oh, here it is. It was 15 million on the Intellivision version of Donkey Kong.
Okay.
And the second place wasn't even like a million.
I think it was like 500 something.
So.
Or, maybe I'm wrong. But yeah, it was really low.
Oh, yeah, here. Yeah. The second place was under a million. So a factor of 15 times to get to that point.
Holy shit.
So at that point, isn't it like, okay, are you the only one playing this game? Or is something going on? So this, to me, is extremely damaging for Twin Galaxies because, yeah, oh yeah, here it is. Yeah, 15 million, second place, 389,000.
389,000. Okay, so I wasn't even right with 500,000.
Centipede, 65 million, second place, 58,000. So I said a factor of 100. I was off. It's way more than 100. It's fucking way more than a factor of 100.
Oh, man.
And a perfect 65 million. So the date verified was 2001 for that. So, but this is fucking bizarre. This whole thing is bizarre. This is for, and I hate to say it, and not to get too personal with some of these personalities involved. You want to hold on to former glory of shit you did when you were a teenager in the early 80s. Okay. That's fine. But to go to the lengths to try to perpetuate lies and deception and fraud, you're fucking sad at that point.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sorry.
Do something better with your fucking life.
You are a sad soul at that point.
Join a band.
I'm sorry you're in your 50s and the highlight of your life was a fucking video game score in 1981. Do something else.
try to do something else,
right?
And not defraud the public over something that really is stupid, but at the end when you're found out, makes you look like a piece of trash.
Yeah,
and I think more scores for maybe other big people in the industry, like maybe Billy Mitchell, will eventually be looked at because of this. People are going to go back and scrutinize a bunch of this shit now.
Right, and I mean, in sadly, a bunch of legitimate scores from people who really did get them and put lots of time and effort into it will probably come under question, and hopefully they won't be reversed. But, you know, this could open up...
can of worms. It's a can of worms.
Yeah, and, you know, there are probably a lot of... like I said, you know, a lot of these old 80s scores probably need to be looked into again. And it's a shame, because there are probably lots of valid ones, but because sure. they let this go for so long, unfortunately, it's all in question.
And now you have to do this now, because now if the person now, these guys are like in their 50s now, or even 60s, if they don't have the ability to go back and do it, they at least have to find someone else that can to verify that this was even possible.
Yeah.
At least go that far.
Right. Like
if you got $65 million, can someone get close to that nowadays? That's an expert.
Right. Like, they need to find someone like a tool-assisted speedrunner
to get that close to
prove that it can be done.
And if not, it's thrown out.
Because obviously a lot of these people in their 50s now don't have the same reflexes,
sure.
but there needs to be some way to show that it can at least be done.
$65 million in Intellivision.com. First of all, why would you put yourself through that? But second of all, it's just
such a bad version.
It's fucking ridiculous. So yeah. I'm glad that this boys club clique from over 30 years is finally getting looked at.
Yeah, me too.
With nefarious fucking characters.
Yeah.
Some convicted pedophiles, by the way, which that's not even alleged. They're convicted pedophiles, but that's a whole other weird fucking disgusting
one.
Issue.
But yeah,
that just shows you the type of character, yeah. maybe, that we're involved with these.
I mean, that's awful. I just want to make sure we're not.
The one that we know about that's convicted. Yes.
Yes. Okay.
But I thought there was a second one that I read about. But
Well, if that's the case, that's...
allegedly,
yeah.
to save us. But anyway. All right. Well, this is some weird drama with Todd Rogers. You really got to take a piss right now.
I mean, yeah, something like that. So give me a minute here.
Speaking of old video games no one gives a shit about, there might be a Pong game show in the works.
Okay.
Atari has partnered with veteran unscripted producer Scott Sternberg to develop a game show based on the classic video game Pong. The show Million Dollar Pong will be produced by Scott Sternberg Productions, with Jeff Merkin serving as producer for Atari. Sternberg quoted, "Pong is a cultural touch point for generations of people. It's not often you'll get the chance to develop a game show concept around such an iconic brand." There's that B word.
Brand.
"I can't wait to give people the chance to see, experience, and play a brand new Pong." Probably never thought about Arkanoid at all or any other of the Pong clones.
Brand.
The past 45 years. Sternberg's game show credits include Catch-21, Rock and Roll Jeopardy, The Gong Show, Love Connection, Hollywood Squares, and Kids Wheel of Fortune. All right.
Brand.
We're talking about a game that's 46 years old now, right?
Yes. And honestly, I mean, from where I sit behind a video game store counter, most people who played it don't even remember it particularly fondly. I mean, it was important, sure, but I don't think a lot of people fondly remember Pong.
I think only if you grew up with it. Because hear me out. The guy working at my house actually said, "I remember playing Pong." He remembered playing the cocktail version. And he actually said to me, "I wouldn't mind getting that old one I remember playing when I was a kid." But you know what? He's 60 years old now. So, like, that's the age range and up that remember finally playing Pong in the 70s.
Well, I mean, but that's what I'm saying. So, yes, I'm sure that exists. And, but like I said, I have people that age range who come in with kids,
and they don't care,
and they don't give a shit. I mean, they remember it. They're like, "Oh, that was that was neat." But I mean, I don't see Pong. I mean, appealing.
Well, the thing is that Pong as a brand has been so diffused with all the Pong clones of the 70s. You know,
yeah,
all the Odyssey clones. You know. Coleco made their ones, you know. Obviously, Atari made Pong and the Pong one-offs, and there's probably fucking 20 in my garage that I don't need. You know,
APFs
so,
and
the APFs, yeah, APF TV fun. So if you played Pong, odds are you did not play Pong. You played a Pong clone.
Right. You played APF Squash or something like that. I mean, I don't know.
APF Squash?
Yeah. Yeah.
I lie. But so when you bring a game show on the air, you want to appeal to as much people as you probably can. That's why you have all these game shows that get like, nowadays with the game show, they have stars that host them now. You get Ellen hosts a game show. You have to get you get people. You want to get people in, like, they're not prime time events.
Right.
It's like, oh, you have LeBron James producing one of these and some other people. Pong by itself isn't going to bring people to watch more than maybe one episode out of curiosity. Say, what the fuck are they going to do with Pong?
Right.
How do you make, like, for example, when they had the game show based on like Scrabble? You remember that?
Yeah.
Game show had nothing to do with Scrabble. Yeah, you know, it was just doing filling in letters and guessing the name of what that word was, right?
It was some shitty permutation of
they used the
Wheel
name
of Fortune, essentially.
Kind of,
yeah.
It was like a daytime, you know, sort of game show, but they used the Scrabble name. But there's still words involved. So you can have a game show based upon that. With Pong, how are you going to have, like, the early rounds of Pong, you know, before you get to the finale where you get a giant Pong controller and you know, and play? You know, like, even that, how do you involve Pong more than just what it is, which is electronic table tennis?
I mean, double dare? I bounce back the question to the opposing team.
Yeah, it has to be some sort of trivia involved.
Yeah.
Or a word search or a number puzzle, you know what I mean? Or some sort of mash game. Like with Nick Arcade, nothing had to do with video games until really the end. Or the two video challenges they did for a minute out of the 22-minute episode.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Like, I mean, you had to land on a video challenge, too. I mean,
sure,
it wasn't
but I'm saying,
a given.
But the other games and quizzes had nothing to do with video games.
No.
So with Pong, 99% of this will have nothing to do with Pong because you can't have permutations of Pong being a game show. Like, how do you do that? I'm now wondering now. Now, actually, I want to see this happen because I don't know how you would translate Pong into a game show. Maybe I'm the audience. Maybe they want Pat to be on the game show. I don't know.
Two-person teams, okay?
Okay.
You hook one person up to an elaborate set of bungees and pulleys. The other person pulls them, and the host just stands there whipping shit at them. And you
just throws baseballs at them?
Yeah, and you got
a basketball with like a pan or something?
Yeah, I mean, no, with your chest. I don't know, this is going to be fucking awful.
No network yet attached to the show. That's
no shit.
A shock. I like how the article of Variety has to like point out what Atari is known for. Early pioneer in the video game field. Known for Asteroid Centipede, Missile Command, and Roller Coaster Tycoon. We'll get to that.
Yeah, I guess.
Our brand, and our portfolio of games are known to many people around the world, so it is a natural fit to bring them to television.
No!
Said Frederick Chesney. CEO or Chesney, CEO of Atari.
It was a more natural fit to take him to Denny's, where at least it was hilarious.
That's still the highlight, probably not just Atari the past 15 years, but of this podcast.
Oh, that was just a joyous occasion. We were so happy with that. Hashdroids. Oh, Hashdroids. Anyways.
All right. This is just, I guess, along with the Atari watches and whatever else, trying to see what fits with the Atari brand.
Nothing does anymore. All right, so this was brought to my attention by a listener of the podcast, and I retweeted it, and this thing blew the F up. So this was brought to my attention by...
And my attention?
Yes, and your attention, by Alexander Samis. And what it is they found a...
It was a tweet.
Yeah, it was a tweet. If true, what they found was an Earthbound with a garbage-looking label, potentially a fake label, at a Goodwill. And when they opened it to check inside, they found a note. And that note reads, I can't see it as well on this computer. Hello, gamer. If you bought this copy of Earthbound, opened it, and are reading this, congratulations. You just bought a copy of Super Scope 6 for the SNES. It's a very fun game, in my opinion, much better than Earthbound. A lot cheaper. Also, have fun and keep on gaming. Dash Super Mario with the gloved peace sign.
From Mario.
From Mario. Now, we can't see the board to check it.
A label swap.
Yeah,
I didn't see this at the time because this is the Model 1 Super Nintendo cart with the horizontal. They did away with that within a couple years.
Yep, there you go.
And Earthbound was one of the last, a later release in 95, and they had the slanted front. So this is, I can't believe I didn't notice at the time, this is a label swap.
Yeah, plus it looks purposely, the label looks purposely worried. Bad. Yeah.
Worn, yeah.
So
they turned this into a game store?
It looks, I mean, we don't know what game store it was turned into, but this person found it at a Goodwill.
Okay.
So, I mean, but all it says on the note is if you bought this and opened it and are reading this, so they don't know where it is. It's kind of funny. It's also kind of fucking sad that someone would be this big of a douchebag.
Unless they got screwed on it. Maybe they bought it and figured, I got screwed, I'll pass along a joke to someone else. I'm just happy that no one really got hurt by this by spending $100 on this game.
Yeah, I mean, if this person who brought it to our attention got this from a Goodwill and didn't pay much for it,
they paid $3.
Huh?
It was like $3 they paid.
Oh, I see. I lost track of it because it blew up. So, here's the response. Oh,
yeah,
okay. So, yeah, now it's even more. I mean, now I definitely believe it. Yeah, customer brought it in. We didn't verify if the label was real or not. They left with it after we opened to check the board and discovered the note.
Oh, they left with it. So they
left. Okay.
It. Okay.
So, yeah, sorry about that for questioning. I didn't see the rest of that story. $3.
Well, what's interesting about this is that people are just ripe for this because when they tweeted this out, it wasn't a direct tweet. I didn't retweet it until I looked later. I was like, holy shit, there's a ton of retweets and likes. Then I retweeted it. And I was like, what the fuck? So other people just caught wind of this somehow and just started saying, this is hysterical. And it is, you know.
Yeah. Well, okay.
I don't think I ever even retreated it.
I guess I don't feel so bad because this person, Sir Mitten Squire, didn't get ripped off. I was afraid they got ripped off.
It was a lot of funny responses. Chris Cole responded. You have the nice people were saying, oh, no, that's awful. Yeah, I mean, someone ruined a Super Scope label is what it comes down to. But someone went to a lot of effort to put that note in. Unless I did a bunch of those and got a bunch of Super Scopes. Does that note look handwritten or is that what look?
No, that looks handwritten.
It is handwritten?
Yeah. I was just concerned someone got ripped off with that.
In my opinion, much better than Earthbound. Well, you can't play unless you have the Super Scope and you have a CRT TV. A lot cheaper. Well, that's the thing, though. If you bought that thing, it was an Earthbound, though, you got screwed. But, yeah, look at the cart type. That's the giveaway there.
Yeah,
the
and that, that label is garbage.
Yeah, I thought it was a fake label. I said, okay, maybe this is a board swap, whatever. Like, no, now I'm looking. Yeah, I didn't know at the time. I was like, yeah, it's the cartridge is the wrong cartridge. It's a real cartridge. It's just a Super Scope cartridge. All right, it's a funny little thing. It's a goofy little. We never talk about tweets, really, but we thought it was fun.
Yeah.
Better than GameStop doing it, I guess, or GameStop getting caught with it.
Yeah, this wasn't even a Q&A. This was just this became an interesting topic.
All right, Ian. So there is a Start Engine campaign, which is an investment website, Start Engine. It's like Kickstarter, except instead of getting something in return on a site like Start Engine, there's a few of them, like angel investing sites, where you're actually putting in money to gain a piece of the investment final product.
Sure.
So this is Atari coming back, trying to get a port of probably the biggest Atari title of the past 20 years.
Atari, Atari, Atari. All day today.
Roller Coaster Tycoon, they want to get it onto the Switch.
Man, okay? You'd think they'd want to get it on the Atari box.
Oh, man. That would be good. All right. So this is a campaign. Again, it's a Start Engine campaign. Let's try to sell investors on doing it. So the investment is any amount into the campaign with a $250 minimum, and it'll earn your pro rate a share of 50% of profits until you make 120% of the original investment, after which you'll earn your... This is, I don't know what the fuck that means, and I know should know a little bit about investing. All right, so you're investing for a piece of the pie of the profit sharing of this, if it comes out. However, They're asking for a goal of $1 million in order to get this port done. They're at 40,000, 39,588, with only 80 investors and 83 days left. Suffice to say, they might not make the goal of doing that.
Yeah, I'm not sure they're going to.
So it's a description of what Atari Game Partners is. Atari Game Partners is a wholly owned subsidiary of Atari. Our mission is to develop and publish games from Atari's iconic and prolific library containing 200-plus gaming franchises, like Atari Circus, for handheld platforms and others. Given the breadth of the Atari portfolio, which is an inch deep, we decided to team up with investors to take full advantage of the depth, the diversity, and the opportunities that are presented with such a catalog. Atari Game Partners is eager to continue that success by bringing one of gaming's most beloved franchises to one of the biggest emerging platforms. Okay, sounds like this Atari Game Partners was formed as a smaller company just to say, okay, we have all these games that exist. Let's try to put them back out there in the public eye, re-release them, get them on other platforms. All right? Makes sense. So they're pushing Roller Coaster Tycoon as well. It was 1999 was the first release. Wow, almost
right.
20 years.
So, I mean, right off the bat, I think this is insane. $1 million to port a game to a Switch that was released in 99, and you can get on your smartphone, and they actually quote from BuzzFeed, "We loved this game a ton back in the day and love it even more now that we can distract ourselves even further on our smartphones." I mean, why?
Why would it be hard to port that version, than you're saying, to the Switch?
Well, that, and also, why aren't you doing a later version of Roller Coaster Tycoon?
Is it clear this is the first version
yes,
you want to port?
It directly states that right.
Oh, that's kind of weird then.
It directly states that right up here. The unmitigated success of the Roller Coaster Tycoon franchise made the opportunity clear for Atari Game Partners. That's in bold.
So, okay.
Deliver the first Roller Coaster Tycoon game for the Nintendo Switch.
Does it mean first one on the Switch or the first one that came out in 99 on the Switch?
I don't know, but I mean, if they're quoting the one, like I said, they just quoted the one that was on smartphones, which the smartphone quote from BuzzFeed mentions the one back in the day.
All right, so it comes out in 99. Sequel, it was in 2002. Atari got control of the franchise in 2004. Platinum Edition comes out in 2006. Nothing for 11 years until the smartphone game Roller Coaster Tycoon Touch in 2017.
Okay, so maybe that's the one they're porting.
But if they're porting that one, I mean, what? How much would they have to do?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, let's put it this way. If excellent indie game studios and, you know, cool publishers like Limited Run can get games onto the Switch, there's no fucking way this is $1 million. I'm sorry. There's no fucking way.
I don't know. I don't know what it would take to port this over. I have no idea. There's a pre-alpha picture on here. I don't know if according to this schedule, if they get the funding, this is going to come out this year. So this is coming out this year. This has to be somewhere in some early development by now, you would think.
Okay. I mean, perhaps I'm wrong, but I mean, it's just weird that they would ask for investors on this if they're that certain about this.
Here's a point, though, Ian. It's not from, this game isn't from scratch by any means.
No,
the
it's
engine's
not.
Done.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's what I've been pointing out to some degree is that this is not a scratch game.
They want to do multiple scenarios, sandbox mode, which, and they have a tycoon career mode. All right. So, no, this says it's going to begin development. So this isn't. All right, I don't know.
Okay, the best thing I can say is at best this is an incredibly obtuse and confusing pitch.
You know what's not a confusing
huh.
about this pitch? The motivation. Because they figured, wow, the Switch is selling a fuckload through the season, and let's make that part of the pitch, which they did here, about, 14 million Switch consoles will be sold by March 2018. They figured, oh, what's probably the only modern Atari title we can put on a Switch? Roller Coaster Tycoon. So let's get it on there, and let's get some backers, which isn't a bad idea. I don't know if $1 million is what you need to get it done, though.
Oh, and by the way, Roller Coaster Tycoon's a lot of fun, but it's just
oh, yeah, absolutely.
Like,
I played it way back.
This is just insane.
But yeah, stunning 3D graphics. All right. I mean, is the one on the phone like that? Let me look. I mean, you can ramble about what you like about Roller Coaster Tycoon and making people throw up off the rides.
Well, I mean, I'd rather talk about Theme Park from Bullfrog, actually, which was far better.
The spiritual successor?
It was the original, basically.
Was that Oz before Roller Coaster Tycoon?
Yeah, that was early. That was very early. I liked that one because you could right-click on certain rides and go on a quick little grainy first-person 3D ride. Of certain rides. That one was 2D sprite-based graphics, and you could definitely make people throw up all over the place. And if you didn't put proper toilets in, little people would appear.
There's multiple Roller Coaster Tycoon games. It looks like
It
looks like you can get the original for $6. But the one, it looks at, the one Roller Coaster, what the fuck? Roller Coaster Tycoon Touch,
roller coaster.
Graphically, looks really fucking similar to the pictures they're showing here.
Right, so I bet you they just took,
they probably just
superimposed the pictures onto a Switch.
So I want to make sure these features are the same. Users collect card packs by completing missions and progressing through the game. Oh, is that part of it? Well, I'm gonna guess that the port is just gonna be the app game, and that's the port. And then they're gonna just put some Switch bells and whistles, and they'll be done with it.
Sweet.
$1 million.
$1 million.
All right. My guess.
Oh,
not saying for sure, but that's my guess.
Atari,
Pong, game shows.
Pong game shows.
Weird consoles that may never come out.
And a $1 million port of Roller Coaster Tycoon for the Switch.
Ian, you like Blue Apron, don't you?
I do.
What did you just have recently in the past? I had the Korean pork ginger dish, which was restaurant quality to
didn't,
me.
Didn't you
good.
Have like the Russian goulash dish as
I did.
Well? That sounds very
I
good.
I had the goulash. Didn't know if I'd like it or not, but you know what? It was delicious.
Nice. I had something recently. Don't remember. I make so many of these that I can't remember all of them at this point. But it had collard greens, and that was delicious. I haven't had collard greens in so long, so that was fantastic.
I had jerk shrimp tacos that
Ooh.
Were really good.
Well, that's insane.
Really good.
Nice.
Now I'm starving again.
Yep, I'm hungry.
That slice of pizza didn't do enough. But you know what will satiate you? Blue Apron. They're the leading meal kit delivery service in the U.S. Well, many people know what they do. Many don't know the types of meals you can get, like strip steaks with potatoes and spicy maple collard greens, steakhouse-inspired favorite with delicious twist, chili-infused maple syrup. All right. They're convenient, pre-portioned ingredients come to your door. Most can be cooked in under 45 minutes. I think the jerk chicken took me like a half hour. The jerk shrimp tacos took me a half hour. And the meat dish took me about 45-50 minutes to do it. But I'm slow. I'm not good with garlic and pre-prep. I'm not good. You like pre-prep? I don't like the prep. I'm not good at that.
Oh, I love pre-prep. I blow right through that.
I'm good at the actually like putting the shit together and stirring it and timing the stuff to come out. I'm good at that. We got to work together. They offer 12 new recipes each week, Blue Apron, and you can pick 2, 3, or 4 recipes based upon what fits your schedule.
Yeah, that's something that I really started to notice that's fantastic is if you actually go explore the website, you get a lot of options.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, I mean, you don't...
Are vegetarian dishes.
Yeah, I mean, some are vegetarian dishes, but, you know, I use Blue Apron more than just the free codes, and I just take what they send, and it's always good. But if you go on there, you can pick from a whole lot more. I mean, it's pretty incredible.
Upcoming, you got Mexican chicken and rice casserole. Oh, we just missed that one. Coming up, you got garlic caper chicken, southern pork chops, Baja-style tilapia tacos, 3-cheese pizza, white cheddar cheeseburgers, sheet pan-fried chicken. There's pasta dishes. There's fish dishes. There's broccoli and ricotta cannelloni. I'm going to try that one.
What was the one before the 3-cheese pizza?
The Baja-style tilapia tacos.
Yeah, I want to do that.
Usually have like 4 choices a week, and you can pick what you want. You can skip weeks. All right. So here's how you get the CU Podcast deal. All right. You get $30 off your first order if you go to blueapron.com/CU Podcast. You get $30 off your first order, and that's a pretty good deal.
Ba-doom, boom, boom.
So, all right. It's usually locally sourced. You know, if they send you the shrimp or they send you the meat, it's not frozen. It's fresh.
Yeah, it's independent farms. It's fresh stuff. It's very tasty, quality ingredients.
Again, blueapron.com/CU podcast. Save $30 off your first order. Proud sponsors of my appetite and the CU podcast. Ian, you like that Royal Rumble? We haven't done a WWE topic in a while. We usually do Royal Rumble and WrestleMania, maybe SummerSlam. We do the big four usually.
Yeah, generally. I did. Well,
Royal Rumble. Man.
I enjoyed, for the most part, the actual Rumbles.
I did. Yeah. I was surprised.
Yep, me too. Well, yeah, I wasn't surprised. So
you weren't surprised that they were better than the past fucking 6 years, at least?
The original Rumble didn't surprise the normal Royal Rumble, not the Women's Rumble, didn't really surprise me because I was hanging out with my friend Chris the day before, and he explained a situation to me that made perfect sense, and it's exactly how it played out with Nakamura winning. And but it was a fun Rumble to watch all the same.
It was booked well.
It was booked, yeah.
Very well paced.
It was booked well.
Rusev number one was great because the crowd fucking loves Rusev now.
Yep,
so he lasted, but they got to do something with Rusev. I've loved Rusev since he came. I always thought he was great. He's good in the ring. He really is into the character, and you can tell he's a fun loving guy. They got to pull the trigger on him in Aiden English.
Yeah,
they have to do something.
They do.
Him.
Aiden English is so good.
You didn't think Aiden English? He goes from splitting up a jobber tag team. They put him with Rusev, and it's like it clicks somehow. You're like, what the fuck?
He was awesome in NXT as well, though. I mean, I really, really dig Aiden English. It was really cool to see Ziggler back at 30.
It was. I mean, he's only been gone for like a month or month and a half, but it was good.
Yeah, I mean, I really like Ziggler. But yeah, I mean the
Cena eliminating Balor near the end. Balor was the longest lasting Iron Man. He needs a rehabilitation of his character a little bit, and that was good for him.
Yep,
and getting thrown up, and he just had a good match with Cena on Raw, even though he lost. It was a good match.
That's cool.
You know,
I thought the back and forth with Cena and Cena and
Reigns.
Yeah, Reigns was pretty good actually.
To go off their feud, that hot feud from last year.
Yep.
Rey Mysterio looked like he was 15 fucking years younger.
No, he didn't. This is where I'm going to disagree
really?
With you. First of all, when he came out, I popped for about half a second. I said, no, this is really bad. Dude has no fucking knees. Dude should not be in the ring.
It looked like he wasn't wearing any braces. Did he get knee replacement surgery?
I don't know, but did you see his legs? Dude does not do leg day. Probably because dude cannot do leg day. Every time he did anything, including standing or walking, I was like, please, go sit down. I want Rey Mysterio. I wish we could have Rey Mysterio back. I love Rey Mysterio.
He has surgically repaired knees.
Okay.
That was the best he has looked in over 10 years. He was ripped. He has never been ripped in WWE. Like, he looked good to me.
That's fine. I mean,
he looked good.
I love Rey Mysterio. I worried about him every
That's
second
fine.
He was in the ring.
He looked good.
You can ask. I mean, everyone I watched it with, the whole time he was in the ring, I was like just panicked for him. I love the dude. I just don't want to see him get injured or hurt.
I don't think they would have had him come in with that spot and do those moves if they weren't confident that he was in the best shape he's been in for a long time.
I know.
They wouldn't have because he hasn't been there for like 4 years.
I know.
Remember people were disappointed in the Royal Rumble 2014 when he was number 30 and wasn't Daniel Bryan. People were like, what the fuck? That was already 4 years ago. And he was gone shortly after that because of the injuries. He looked in great shape. We're going to disagree on that one. He hadn't looked in that good a shape since maybe the WCW days. Like, he looked shredded compared to what he used to be in WWE.
I'm just saying. Like,
we're going to disagree on that.
It's not disagreement. I love
for a nostalgia act. If it was just that, he did great.
Sure,
he pulled off all his moves well.
I love the dude. It's not a dislike of him. I just, man.
I mean, the guy's over 40. Oh, he's 44. So yeah.
Sure. I'm just these days I tend to worry more about the wrestler's health than wanting to see them back. And I surgically repaired knees. That's both.
I liked that the final four was two of the
yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Was Reigns and Cena, which the fans hated, but they're like, oh, okay. And then you had Nakamura and Balor.
Yeah, that was
like,
great.
I was like, okay, this is good booking. And even though Reigns is going to be in the final four for every Rumble until we fucking die, apparently, but it at least made sense, the booking for that.
And sadly, the end of the Rumble was actually spoiled for me. I should not have checked Twitter.
You know better.
When I did.
Is this your first Rumble rodeo? You
no,
know better.
It's not. I could tell, I mean, just by watching it, the tension they built.
Oh, yeah.
Was very, very good.
The last 10 minutes were really good.
Yeah. I mean, even though I knew, I was hyped.
You could still think that Reigns could win, what, his fucking third in 4 years or 5 years, whatever it would have been.
And what I loved was there was no
second in 4 years, whatever.
There was no, like, gimmicky. Well, I mean, gimmicky is kind of the wrong word. There was no gimmicky finish to it. I loved how Nakamura just after...
He hit a knee on him.
Yeah, hit the knee on him, just picked awesome. Him up and threw him over the top rope, and that was
yeah, there
it.
Wasn't anything like, oh, the struggle at the end. I was like,
yeah, no.
Oh, they go back and forth.
Just pick him up.
Couple of false finishes.
Dump him.
And that's sometimes they do that.
Yeah.
But I love Heath Slater getting his little spot.
Oh, yeah, that was great.
Eliminating Sheamus. That was fun. Yep. You had Kofi with his spot where he gets back in. And
oh, the sheet tray of pancakes.
Yes, it's kind of clever. It's still not played out totally. No, it was.
They were really playing with the rules. I mean, as we move on to the women's match, they did the same thing
but
with.
Stick on Nakamura real quick. Nakamura needed the win because
yes, he did.
He's had such a boring run on Raw.
Yeah.
Or excuse me, SmackDown since he got
SmackDown,
there.
Yes.
Over the past 8-9 months, it hasn't been really fruitful at all. He had a bad feud with Jinder Mahal that didn't really go anywhere or do anything for him during the whole, well, we got to make Jinder Mahal a thing, even though he's not good at all. And that was during that whole part. He's had a little thing with Randy Orton, but he's been in limbo ever since being on the main roster. It's been absolute limbo.
Well, I mean,
and they haven't booked him right.
Disappointingly, WWE hasn't done great things with their NXT stars. I mean, it was really upsetting.
Well, guys like Balor got that injury, which really killed him out of the gate, unfortunately. And they've done okay here and there, but he's been kind of been lost. What's been great is Elias has been fantastic.
Oh, yeah,
Elias is going to be huge this year.
Yeah, I agree. I think so.
So they've been doing the right thing with him ever since the beginning. They've been spotlighting him every week, give him a chance to develop some ad-lib skills out there. He looks like a star. He looks like Randy Savage, like the new Randy Savage, just how he looks. He kind of looks like him. He does. He looks a lot like Randy Savage. You might want to see he does.
I don't know.
He has the same build as Randy Savage.
Yeah, but, okay. I mean, build-wise, it's similar.
The Lesnar triple threat match was garbage.
Oh, it was fucking awful.
It was awful. You knew that Kane was going to be the fall guy for that because Kane's like 50 years old and doesn't belong in the ring anymore.
And by the way, what a piece of shit Lesnar is.
Why? Oh, because he potatoed.
Yeah.
So it looked like he got kneed in the face, though, and responded by really punching Braun Strowman.
It was a thigh, and yeah, it looked stiff, but it's...
Lesnar really hit him hard.
That stuff, I mean, is pretty... If you get stiffed, I don't think Strowman meant it. I'm pretty sure that was a mistake. And two, getting a stiff thigh to the side of the face, or to the face, is not... I mean...
No, that'll fuck you up, Ian. It will.
Sure, but not as much as a straight punch to the fucking temple.
They're both bad. I'm not going to say what's going to hurt more. I haven't got a thigh to the head in quite a while. In my MMA days, no, I haven't done. I think from my reports, we were saying that Lesnar was trying to rein in, that Strowman was going a little bit too much, like he was too amped up, and that was maybe Lesnar trying to bring him back down to earth. But yeah, you could tell. Corey Graves said later, yeah, Strowman's still feeling that punch from like a few minutes before.
Yeah, there are other ways to rein people in than punch them in the temple.
Well, you know, you're not a fan of Lesnar to begin with, but
The triple threat with AJ Styles was very good because AJ Styles can wrestle a mop and it's fun. But that actually worked as a handicap match. Handicap matches are hard to be entertaining.
I hated it. I just don't. I like all three of those wrestlers. I just don't like handicap matches.
They're hard to book properly. But I think for what it is, they did a decent job there, and they still protected him because he wasn't the right guy in the ring. All right. So at first I was wondering, before we get to the women's rumble, why that was put on last, and we'll get to why it was put on last in a second. But my fear with the women's Royal Rumble was there isn't enough good talent to have 30 roster spots at all. There isn't even 30 women. There's not even 22 women. So they had to bring back some ones, but they brought back probably the best they could have brought back from the prior generation.
Oh, I thought the women's Rumble was fantastic, and I thought it was pretty obvious from the start that they were going to pull out the best women wrestlers they have, which are great. I mean, the best women wrestlers they have are fantastic. And I thought it was, I couldn't believe they started the women's rumble with Lynch and Banks. But I mean, it got it off to a really good start.
You want to have two good wrestlers in there. You can't have someone that's like,
arguably their two best.
You can't have Alicia Fox where it's like, she can be good, but she can be a disaster in the ring. You have to have solid wrestlers to carry it.
Right. But they did pace it very well.
They also protected it by having the ring cleared a lot of times with the women on the outside underneath the ropes. So it wasn't getting too muddled. They did that too.
Right. I think that was good because where the women shine is actually in their one-on-one wrestling. As they stated a number of times, it was the first Rumble they've done in the WWE. Maybe, it worked very well. A lot of wrestling actually got to be pulled off. I think they paced the best wrestlers they had well, bringing Bayley out late, allowed for, talent to be entered in. And every single surprise entrant was
a good one.
A great pop. It was great to see Lita again. Everyone knew Trish was going to be.
Michelle McCool did great.
30.
She looked great.
I wasn't super impressed with her, but she was pretty decent.
Kelly was just as awful as she's always been.
Yep.
Which didn't belong in there at all.
Yep. Absolutely miserable.
She was the worst one.
The Vicky Guerrero part was absolutely awful, though.
I love that.
Oh my God, I couldn't stand it. It was just so painful.
She did it a little bit too much, but Vicky Guerrero probably, I would say just from her 4-year run, belongs in the WWE Hall of Fame. Probably the best villain they've had in the past 15 years in WWE.
She was a great villain.
It's fantastic.
It broke up everything.
I thought it was fun.
Vicky
Guerrero.
I think it would have been more fun towards the beginning, not in the middle.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
And Jesus Christ, please. I mean, the screeching. Oh my God. I realized
it. She did it over the top.
Yes. It was a little too fucking over.
Crowd loves her. She had one of the best going away, matches ever when she got one up on Stephanie when she left a couple years ago.
I love Vicky Guerrero as Vicky Guerrero. I just thought they worked that part awful. I thought that they worked that part awful.
The Trish Stratus looked fucking great. Hasn't missed a beat.
I thought her elimination was particularly great, where she went for her finisher.
And Sasha dumped her.
And Sasha dumped her.
They're turning Sasha heel. They have to.
Fantastic.
Yeah,
yeah.
It makes sense. And everything in the match, you can show they're going to do that.
She's one of the best heels that I've seen in a while. And it was fun to see her as a face for a while because the crowd absolutely adores her. But the crowd adores Sasha one way or another.
Nia Jax they used great.
I love Nia Jax. Like, I've totally flipped on Nia Jax. I love her to death, and she was used perfectly
as the big giant character in there, which they didn't really have on the men's side. There wasn't a big giant character they all have to team up on, really.
Yeah,
this year they usually have at least one a year. No Braun Strowman showing up in the match. They probably wanted to protect him. They didn't really have that.
Yeah, you're right.
Which is strange. Usually have at least one a year. Even if it's like Mark Henry, they'll trot him out to get thrown out by like five guys.
And that's always fun. Nia Jax was
Kelly again was fucking awful.
Oh, she's
got
she's
a big
miserable
pop because she was the biggest one for a while.
but terrible.
Beth Phoenix coming out was great.
Oh, people were really amped for that. I was more surprised than I thought that they really wanted to see that.
Yeah, but that was
versus
great.
Nia, right?
Yeah. Wait, no, was it? No, it wasn't Nia. It was
Was it Nia?
No, Beth Phoenix went up mostly singles with
Who did she stare on? She stared on someone huge. Who was it?
It wasn't Nia. Keep talking. I'm gonna look.
Oh, okay, I'll look it up too.
It was Beth Phoenix and you look it up.
Beth Phoenix wasn't even gone that long ago, which is funny. She's already in the Hall of Fame.
But no, I mean, she was great, and it was fun. I can't remember who she was up against. But all in all, I think the women's
it did better than I thought. I thought it was not going to be good at all.
I had pretty good expectations for it, and they were met. But like I said, I don't know if they were exceeded, but like I said, I had pretty high expectations for it. I had no doubt that the talent could pull it off as long as.
Yeah, she did face off with Nia Jax.
Oh, it was Nia Jax. Okay.
The crowd was going nuts.
Yeah.
She tried to lift her up a couple times.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was awesome. Okay. You're right. It was Nia Jax. And I mean, she did lift her up.
Asuka was obviously great.
Yeah, Asuka was great.
When Mickie James faced off with Trish, everyone went nuts.
Yep.
That was the biggest female rival in the past 15 years.
Yeah, we didn't even bring up Asuka, but Asuka was obviously fantastic. I think it really just I had faith in
Lita did her awful moonsault. Yeah, pop for it. The worst moonsault I've ever seen.
That let's lay down.
Let's just lay back.
And just, yeah. What was I gonna say? Yeah, I had no doubt in the roster. It was all going to boil down to how well the guest appearances did, and the guest appearances did very well.
Sure.
I hated the fact that they did not let Asuka pick at the end.
Well, that's what we're going to get to. And this is the reason why this was the last match of the night.
Because
you hear bad reputation come on. And no, I was not a surprise participant in the Women's Royal Rumble. That would have been great. But no, Ronda Rousey comes out to announce that, hey, I guess she's with WWE now, and they report after us, yes, she signed a deal with them. I'm not sure it's just a part-timer deal, but it probably will be like a Lesnar thing, I'm guessing, where she wrestles like 5-6 times a year at most. But she comes out, ruins Asuka's moment, that's what pissed me off the most, and then, you know, points at WrestleMania sign, and it's like, oh, what's going to happen? Well, turns out where it's going to be Ronda Rousey, versus Charlotte Flair, and you're going to have Asuka versus my girlfriend Alexa Bliss. That's what the match is going to be at WrestleMania.
So I was that bums me out. I didn't know that's how it panned out. I wanted to see Asuka Flair so bad, so fucking bad.
Well, they're on different shows.
Yeah, but I mean that doesn't matter. I mean that's why you get the choice, and that's why I wanted to see the choice. I really wanted Asuka to, like, I could have sworn that's where it was going. Mm-hmm. I mean, I figured that, you know, they would spice it up a little bit and have her choose the opposite show.
Unfortunately, I really don't give a shit about Ronda Rousey being in WWE. I think it's 2 years too late. Obviously,
but. That's kind of my point. Like, yeah, give Asuka the better match.
Well, no, just give her the spotlight. I'd have Rousey come out on Raw or whatever and just do that. Or Smack, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
That dominated the night. It wasn't about Asuka anymore.
Yes.
It wasn't about Nakamura. By the way, two Japanese wrestlers winning the Royal Rumbles, I never, ever thought I would see that.
Right.
I didn't think they were going to have Nakamura win it. I really didn't until I saw it. Because this is the first one that actually makes sense in elevating someone that needed it.
Yep.
When's the last time that happened with the Rumble?
Yeah, I was actually blown away
seven,
by that,
7-8 years? Think back to the last time that happened. Where it was like, wow, this is the guy that is a kind of a surprise a little bit, but really needed it to get to that next level.
Mm-hmm.
Where it actually means something, like how the King of the Ring used to give someone a rub.
For the first time in a long time, I'm actually excited for a WrestleMania.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, that's going to be a fucking match.
For the first time in 6 years, the crowd wasn't booing at who won the Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
That's a good sign.
People were happy.
maybe it's good that Vince is doing the XFL so Triple H can maybe get in there and have some decisions.
I mean, my thoughts on Rousey, and then I'm going to leave it there. I think she's likable. I do think it's probably a year too late for her to come in. She probably should have come in when people were talking about it.
When she showed up 2 years ago?
Oh, was that 2 years ago?
Yeah.
I mean, I realized she was a little bit busy then, but still, last year probably would have been better. Like I said, I like her, but it's too late. And yeah, it really, really pissed me off that it diminished. I mean, Nakamura got his moment to celebrate.
I would have done that match last.
It really upset me that Asuka didn't get her moment, and it really pissed me off that Asuka. I mean, did Asuka actually get to choose on Raw?
No.
See,
although it should be, she didn't at the Royal Rumble. She didn't.
Well, no, I know at at the Royal Rumble she didn't. Did she get to choose on Raw?
I didn't see that part.
It just pissed me off. I mean, what are we going to get? Are we going to get a Shamrock?
Well, here's the thing. We knew Lesnar was a good wrestler before he came back. We have no idea what Rousey's going to be.
Right.
And she's going to be.
Well, that's what I said. Are we going to get a Lesnar or are we going to get a Shamrock?
Oh, well, Shamrock was.
Okay.
Shamrock was all right as a wrestler.
But, I mean, there is a difference there.
Yeah. Or you can get someone terrible.
Even worse, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you can get someone that's horrific. We don't know. And that's going to be your first big match at WrestleMania. But reportedly, she's been training for months, though. But still, to headline WrestleMania like that, I don't know. That's something weird. All right, so we actually enjoyed Royal Rumble. We're not just haters of it.
No. I mean, the actual Rumbles I very much enjoyed. The other matches, whatever.
Sure.
All right.
Q&A time.
I'm dying here.
Q&A time on the CU podcast. It. Ian asks,
this is from Insert Coin News. Thoughts on Collectorvision registering the Acclaim trademark?
Okay. So Collectorvision is partially owned and operated by Games31. I'll just get that out of the way. So Collectorvision, they do a lot of the homebrews for, they've done it for ColecoVision. I think they've done it in television too. And they also have that Sydney Hunter game coming out for Super Nintendo. So they have registered.
I think they have a Switch version of that coming out too.
So they have registered Acclaim, Exidy, and LJN. Their little toy company LJN. So this seems to be in vogue right now, where you go out and you get these trademarks that haven't been used in forever.
Right.
On its surface, it's not necessarily bad, and I'm not necessarily against it on its surface. As long as it's clear to me, this is not the old company.
Yeah.
But we want to at least use it to brand something new that's connected. Or I think they sell some t-shirts where it's like, okay, fine. You want to try to legally sell the shirts and try to do that? That's fine.
Right.
So I applaud them for being transparent about it. Hey, we're trying to bring this back. We want to honor the brand. That's fine. If you want to pull a fucking Coleco and just basically treat the community like trash and throw it on everything, then I got a problem with it, especially when you're trying to blur the lines between the old company and the new one. Then I have an issue with it.
Yeah.
Outwardly, where it's like, okay, you're trying to pretend that the company never died out, you know, and that the brand didn't die for a reason.
Right. But I highly doubt that's the instance in this case.
Sure.
I mean, and we haven't seen any other situation like Coleco that I can think of.
Where it was dragged through the mud.
Right, exactly.
And then treated the community like shit.
And I think, you know, the choices that Collectorvision has made, Exidy, LJN, Acclaim, those are pretty fun choices.
Sure. I mean, there's a reason a lot of these trademarks go defunct for a reason. I mean,
yeah.
Exidy, you really got to scratch your head and think, okay, how could you use Exidy nowadays?
Fun t-shirts.
Venture.
Yeah.
Chiller.
Chiller. Death
Crossbow.
Race. Death Race.
Death Race, and we're running out of steam.
Yeah.
You know, but it's fine. If you can use it, more power to you.
I mean.
Absolutely. LJN has a little bit more. You have toys. You have some games.
Yeah.
If you want to bring back video art, go for it. You know.
Yeah.
But there's other entities are doing the same, which we haven't talked about. There's an entity that registered 3DO.
Right.
There's an entity, the same one did it for X-Band,
right.
I believe. And they also did it for, there was another weird third one they did it for. I was like, really? I think Jaguar, you know. So when you think about the use of video game trademarks that are 20 or 30 years old, it's all about usually branding with the game to go along with it. So, for example, if you wanted to make a new 3DO game, you technically don't need the trademark to do that. You can just say, for play on the Panasonic 3DO.
Right.
You just can't use then the 3DO
logo.
Stylized logo. But it doesn't mean, you know, you don't need the trademark to make games for old consoles. And that's what Coleco Holdings was trying to trick people into doing.
Right.
It's like, well, you can't make these games, so it won't be officially licensed. Well, it's like, fuck you, we don't need to be officially licensed.
Yeah, this is a very different thing, and this is why this is more interesting, and this is definitely not as problematic.
Oh, yeah, and I've looked up some of them. Someone, a different entity, has trademarked TurboGrafx 16, but it's whether or not you actually use them for anything is what it comes down to. If you don't use them, the trademark gets defunct again.
Right.
You have to show that you're using it commercially or for a business. And if not, there's a time period that elapses if you don't re-up. It goes back into the void again, and anyone else can use it. And that's what happens with this stuff.
And I think it's you know, especially with something like Acclaim, it's in terms of video game history, you know, it's easy. It'll be easy depending on what's done with this. If it is used to you know, label games or something that Collectivision makes, you know, they want to put this one under the Acclaim imprint. It'll be easy to distinguish between the two.
Sure.
You know, past Acclaim and present Acclaim.
Sure.
Because
it doesn't mean you're going to get the old Acclaim games and re-release them.
Right, exactly. Unlike Atari, where it's very much a soupy mess.
Like the Atari Watch or the,
right,
the Atari
right.
Box. Yeah. Where they're just licensing out to everyone else to use.
I'm actually kind of interested in seeing what they do with the Acclaim light.
Doing their own wireless remote controller.
No, please don't redo the Acclaim wireless remotes.
This is from at Great White Gibster. Do you think increasingly high prices for retro video games will discourage a younger generation to get into collecting?
Did I use this response as an answer to something else, but it still fits. Excuse me. So, yes, the increasingly high prices will be part of what discourages a younger generation to get into collecting. But, or maybe I'm having deja vu, the younger generation did not grow up with physical media. They grew up with digital media.
The ones now.
Right. I would say anyone...
Anyone born from 2005 onward, we'll just say.
I mean, you could even go back to 2000. So let's say anyone who's still in high school, for the most part.
Okay. I would stretch it to more 2005.
Okay.
But okay. We'll say 2000.
And I'm not saying there isn't...
2000!
And I'm not saying there isn't anyone in high school who doesn't like physical media or appreciate physical media.
We're talking about overall, in general.
These people grew up with... This younger generation grew up with... more digital media.
YouTube.
On Steam.
Netflix.
Netflix.
Hulu.
Yeah. Didn't really go out and have to and buy DVDs. You know, a lot of them could have gotten their video game content via download on their system or on their Xbox 360, their PS3, their PS4, their computer. So
in the year 2000.
Stop. So
all these microphones.
What may discourage a younger generation is it's not necessarily discouraging. They could very well lose. I think we may see a loss in interest in physical media collecting with younger generations because they don't have an attachment to physical media to begin with.
Sure. If only there was a documentary coming out addressing this very issue later in the year.
Anyway, so, I mean, that's my response. Yeah, high prices.
Okay.
There's always going to be people interested in things from before they were born, too. Like,
well, let's put it this way. High prices never help the entrance.
No.
And it won't help it if you even have an attachment to physical media like we do. So say you watch some idiot YouTuber going to flea markets and wanting to buy shit, and they see prices from 2010 when a lot of stuff was cheaper.
And of course, that YouTuber caused the rise in price of everyone because he's so popular enough to do that. Anyway, so being facetious. So
I know.
Then you go to your game store and it's like, oh, I want to buy Donkey Kong Country 3. According to this video, it's $5. Oh, what? It's $25? I'm not going to pay that much for it. Fuck it. I'll just download it. So if it's not easy to get into it and it's cost prohibitive, you'll be priced out before you can even get a chance to get into it. Like, there's no, you can no longer ease your way into some of these game collections or to play these old games.
Yeah.
You want to go out and buy Contra, you're still going to pay $25 for it, or $30. It may not be $40 or $45 like it was a couple years ago, but you're still paying a lot of money for a popular game.
Yeah.
Or you're paying $15 for DuckTales. So that quickly adds up.
DuckTales has definitely gone up.
It's gone back up after it came down? Is it?
I don't know that one ever really came down. I mean, it didn't skyrocket, but I'd say it's...
Let's check a certain NES app where I'm not being paid for my revenue like I should. Oh, sorry, go on.
I was going to say, it's probably, I would say, I think it's still hanging around 20. But, I mean, no, I already gave my opinion on this. I already gave my answer to this
1450
question.
DuckTales is at.
Oh.
All right. So it's hovering in there. So I think that's what you're looking at. I think the high prices is definitely not going to help, but you're going to be so limited in the amount of new collectors as we go year and year on that the scene's going to change. Retro game stores are going to definitely evolve and change. And then the conventions are going to change. We've already seen it. At least I've seen it. And I've already started to see NES games tiptoe towards Atari 2600 territory. Especially when it comes to commons. They're tippy-toeing. Not there yet, but it's getting closer than it was before, for sure. So that's where we're at with the next generation. But yeah, 20 years from now, I don't think you're going to have a lot of 15-year-olds go back and buy their Xbox One games physically. Because you know why? Most of them got them digitally.
Sure.
So,
and then, I mean, there's the likelihood that it all gets cracked. And
yeah.
All right, I'm dying. I'm running out of steam. Let's go.
All right.
This is from Brandon Vem. Unlicensed NES Classic Edition with 30 unlicensed games on it. Color Dreams, Tengen, etc. What games do you put on it?
Boy, if only someone had an app so I can list the 99 or so unlicensed games. There's about 90 on here. Okay.
I
want to run
that
through all of them, or you just want to start with the Tengen games and go from there? I want to run these down. We're going to get 30 unlicensed NES games North America, right?
Okay, well, I know which one I'd pick. I know one that I would definitely put on there.
We'll just go in order and we'll say yes or no.
Okay.
Afterburner, no.
No.
Alien Syndrome.
Yeah.
Okay, controversial choice. Arctic Adventure, no. Baby Boomer, no. B-52, no.
No.
Vital Adventures, I'd say yes because it's so fucking goofy.
Yep.
For one of them. Big Nose Freaks Out, like it, no.
No.
Big Nose, okay, no.
Maybe the original Big Nose.
You're way too lenient than me. We're going to run through this list quick. Or we'll fill this quick. Blackjack, no. Ball Bath Knaves, no. Captain Comic, no. Castle Deceit,
okay,
no.
I guess I don't get to decide.
Are you going to say yes to any of these? Captain Comic?
No, but I mean, you're not even giving me a chance here.
Why is... Oh, okay, that's not listed properly there. Okay, what's next? Death Race, Crystal Mines.
Mm.
Death Box. Just stop me when you say, we hear yes. Dizzy the Adventurer, Double Strike, Duck Maze, Dudes with Attitudes, Exodus.
Okay, so that was going to be my one. Either Dudes with Attitude or Trolls on Treasure Island.
All right, up to
that game is fun.
We're up to three or four. Exodus, F-15 City War, Fantastic Adventures of Dizzy. I will say yes to Fantastic Adventures of Dizzy because it's different. Fantasy Zone, no. Firehawk, no.
No.
Almost. Galactic Crusader, fuck it, I'll say yes.
Yeah.
For a bunch of games, cause it's original. Hot Slots, no. Impossible Mission 2, no. Indiana Jones Temple of Doom,
mm-mm.
No. Well, that was both unlicensed and unlicensed, so you can toss that out. Jackpot, no. Joshua, King Neptune, King of Kings, Clax. You want a puzzle game?
I hate Clax.
I don't mind Clax. I'll say maybe to Clax. We need a nice puzzle game.
No, I would pick Mermaids of Atlantis or Bubble Bath Babes.
Over Clax? I'd go
yes.
Clax.
Clax is the worst.
Crazy Creatures, I love it.
I would.
It's goofy, but I wouldn't put it on.
Oh, come on.
It's so
we're not going to fill this up otherwise.
Oh, we will. We're up to like eight already. Line of Spacehead, no, not good.
No.
Little Red Hood, Master Chew, no. Multicards are off, so no Maxi 15. Menace Beach, no. Mermaids of Atlantis, you say yes. Metal Fighter, not that good. MiG-29, that's not bad. Micro Machines, yes.
Yes.
You got to put that on. Miracle Piano. Well, that's licensed, but it's a different game. It's other. Mission Cobra, Moon Ranger. No. Miss Pac-Man, Tengen version. Abso-fucking-lutely.
Yes, yes.
Our NWCs don't count because that's really, well, they're not, they're kind of just other games. Operation Secret Storm, Othello, Pac-Mania, no. Peekaboo Poker, no. Pesterminator, no. Pipe Mania, Puzzle, Pyramid, Pyramid's awful. The Quattro games, no. You got to throw RBI Baseball in, but that was also licensed.
That was also licensed.
So
doesn't count.
No, and not two or three then. Rad Racket. I love...
You love that game.
I love that Rodent. It's not a good game, though. Raid 2020? No. Roadrunner.
Yes. Raid 2020 makes it on there just because it's so fucking bad.
Worse, but Robo Demons is worse, though. So if you're going to put on a bad game, you put Robo Demons on.
But Raid 2020 has such an absurd storyline.
Okay. You got that. Roadrunner, I'd say no. Rolling Thunder, yes. Secret Scout, no.
Roadrunner
is...
I mean, it's average. Okay, I mean, at this point, some things just pass because they're average.
Because we have to do a list of 30 or have trouble. Shinobi, I would say yes.
That's one of the okay Sega ports, sure.
Shockwave, no.
It's playable.
Silent Assault's miserable.
Yes.
Skull and Crossbones is not good. Solitaire, no. Spiritual Warfare, you know what? Fuck it.
It's a pretty decent Zelda clone.
We'll do that in BioVentures. 2 out of 7.
Yeah.
Sunday Funday, no.
No.
Super Sprint, yes.
Yeah.
Tag and Dragon, no.
No.
Tetris. Tengen, yes. Tetris. Absolutely. Tiles of Fate.
Nah.
Tubin. I like Tubin.
Yeah.
Trolls and Treasure Island. Well, you have that or Dudes Without.
But one of those two, yeah.
I'll do Dudes. Ultimate League Soccer is terrible. Ultimate Stuntman? No. It's too uneven.
Yeah.
Venice Beach Volleyball?
No.
Vindicators, I would say yes.
Sure.
Wally Bear, I'd say yes.
Yes. Wally Bear is...
And I don't think we got to 20 games out of that. We couldn't get 30 games.
I'm glad you said yes to Wally Bear because I was going to lunge across the table if you tried to veto Wally Bear.
I don't think we got to 21 or 22 games.
Hey, we tried.
We tried. All right. Well, there you go. There's the app. Check it out, and I won't get paid for it. Okay, next question.
Pat asks,
what about Eon Gaming HD releasing their GameCube HD plug-and-play thingy?
I am glad it's out. Hopefully the reviews will be good for
it. It's on Amazon. It's $150, and it's a GameCube HDMI adapter.
Yeah.
And the guy came up and showed us, at least showed me, at Soul Calibur Gaming Expo. It comes in a cute little GameCube
package. It's in a really adorable package. $150?
Lagless input, it says.
Yeah. $150 is a bit, but, I mean, a lot of HDMI.
You get 640 times 480p progressive scan.
Yeah, a lot of these upscalers are expensive. You know, the HDMI mods for NESs are expensive. So I don't think the price is necessarily out of reasonable range. I think this is going to be great because this should eliminate and improve upon. It's going to eliminate the demand for the component core cables.
Oh yeah, because the first party ones are hard to find and go for a ton, right?
Well, and basically there's only first party ones, and
there's not third party ones they try to make.
They may have, but I mean, people never ask me or for third party ones or ever talk to
for
me
the component
about them.
Cables.
Okay. Yeah, so I'm not saying there isn't, but I know that
the component
cables
ones go for $230.
Sure. So
holy,
this is
shit.
A steal. It'll hook up to a modern TV.
And it'll look better.
It'll look better. No lag input.
Holy shit. I thought they were like $100. $230.
No lag. This will probably be great specifically for the Smash Melee scene. They won't have to look for CRTs constantly.
That's true.
They won't have to look for component cables constantly.
However, you still have the TV refresh or input lag from the TV itself, though, that you don't have with the CRT.
Honestly, if you put it on game mode, you really shouldn't have any issues.
I couldn't beat Mike Tyson even in game mode with the NES Classic. There's just that little bit that you can't get over. But then again, Mike Tyson is really an anomaly because you have to be on frame in order to dodge with that. Why are you looking at me like that?
I don't know. I have people who swear that's doable.
You have to probably have a TV with such a low lag rate on it.
Oh, sure.
But I couldn't on my TV.
So. No, I could see that. So, I mean, they're going to need great TVs, but... Anyways, I see this as a, especially if the Capone cables are going for $230 now. I see this.
Oh,
as
wow,
a,
I thought they were $100 the last.
No, year. No, I thought they were about. Last I checked, they were about $180. So at wow. $150, this is actually a
yeah.
pretty much a steal.
And unlike the other experimental one, this one seems more secure because it sockets into two places on the back. It goes into the composite out and the component out, both next to each other.
And I like it because it's not a mod. It's a straight-up adapter.
Why did they not make that many component cables back then? I guess they figured there was just no market back in 2001,
yeah.
2002. They just didn't do it.
Yeah.
I'm surprised they put it into the system at all, you know, at the time.
Yeah. But, I don't know. They just probably didn't feel like it was going to be necessary.
So, okay, this will do all right. But this brings up a larger point where we're getting to this point with either console re-releases like the Analog coming out with the NT and the Super NT, where you have old consoles having to be upgraded. And now you have a lot of the clones now, too, that support HDMI for these consoles that are 30 years old. Or you have these Atari flashbacks come out that are HDMI compatible. So we're getting to that point now where we're trying to catch up with, which is probably going to be the final leg of technology. I don't know how it can progress past HDMI unless you have fucking, I don't know, photons and holograms. You know what I mean? Like neural nets. But you see what I mean, though?
Yeah.
We're now getting to that point. We just got to wait for, like, the Intellivision HD, you know, to come out. And Saturn HD. But we're getting to that point with a lot of the more popular consoles now.
Nah, man,
now
you go RGB with the Saturn.
Yes, you can do that, Ian. If you have an RGB monitor, you can do that.
No.
Or buy $800 FrameMeister. You can do that.
Saturn does native RGB out, and FrameMeisters aren't quite it.
Right. Well, not everyone has that $1,000 to get 2% better picture.
It's not 2%. 2% is a milk.
2% is a milk.
Yeah.
All right. It's water with white food coloring. So, what do you think is going to be next on the horizon? You're going to get HDMI OG Xbox after this? Do they have a cheap cable for that, or component at least for that? I didn't know.
Components are not expensive for the original Xbox.
Okay. But components are not even on some of these new TVs. I think eventually that's going to be dealt with in the future as well.
Yeah.
Maybe not right now. Within 5-10 years, I think they'll stop with that. So, all right. We're doing this last topic, or you're done?
Let's do it.
All right. At Mark Musso Live, why do you guys think fanboyism is so prevalent, even in adults? Have you ever been fanboys before?
I don't know. It fills an empty spot in your life as an adult, I guess. I don't know.
Well, isn't it, but
it's also, I think it's natural to want to root for a team. I think that's something that some people want to do. Some people have a competitive nature or competitive edge. And
you think you know me.
Yeah. and they want to root for something. I do think fanboyism is ridiculous, especially in video games. I just want people to enjoy what they enjoy. I don't think it needs to be treated like a sport. I mean, if someone has an Xbox One, I don't want any video game system to fail. I want people who have purchased something to be able to enjoy it. I don't have an Xbox One, but I had a 360 and I loved it. This generation I have a PS4 and I love the PS4, and I don't have an interest in an Xbox One, but I don't care. Other than the fact that I'd like to play online with some of my friends who have Xbox Ones, I really don't care. So I think fanboyism is silly. But the second half of the question is, have you ever been fanboys before? And the answer is,
what's the definition of fanboy? I'm gonna look it up while you do that. What's fanboy?
Like hardcore for something. I was a PlayStation fanboy in high school.
The informal definition is a male fan, especially one who is obsessive about comics, music, movies, or science fiction. That's the informal definition according to Google.
Okay.
It means
fanatically being obsessed with one system
extremely,
and hating another system.
The definition on Merriam-Webster is a man or boy who is extremely or overly enthusiastic fan of someone or something.
Right. And in this connotation with video games, it usually is followed by extremely anti-another. system. Sure. So I was a PlayStation fanboy pretty much in high school. I still always loved Nintendo handhelds, but I couldn't stand the N64. And then it's because I didn't like the system, and I didn't like the system naturally, but it was because I had friends who had it and constantly tried to force games down my throat that I didn't like, and tried to they fanboyed me.
Play War Gods, Ian.
Yeah.
No.
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 GoldenEye's the best thing ever. No, it's not.
No,
I've been playing first person shooters forever. So it was kind of my fanboyism of the PlayStation was kind of in response of their fanboyism to the N64. But I mean, was it stupid of me? Yeah, I mean, was it stupid all around? Sure,
absolutely.
But yes, I mean, I think we've all been guilty of being fanboys at some point.
Yeah, I love it. We are known as Nintendo fanboys online, even though we have hatred for some Nintendo stuff. So I don't see how you can call us Nintendo. I just don't.
Yeah, like I said, my 360 was probably my most used console of the last generation. I mean, this generation, it's the Switch and the PS4. I thought the Wii was, I mean, I was very let down with the Wii. There were some great games on it, but I mean, I'm not one of those people who's going to run out there and try to make a billion excuses for the Wii.
So this is why I think it's prevalent. I think people need to belong to groups. Those are tribalistic. And unfortunately, that comes down to sometimes to a certain comic book character you like. I've known Wolverine fanboys that'll fight you to death. Wolverine can defeat any superhero out there. And it's like, no, he can't, dude. Shut the fuck up.
Sure. I think my sports analogy was weaker, but yeah, it's you're right. It's all about being part of a group that wants to root for something or you know, push something up is the best.
Yeah, and we see it now in social media more with celebrities, and there's fanboys of different celebrities and looking at celebrities like they're fucking gods. That's a whole other conversation we can get into at some other time about celebrity worship.
Not now.
But there is a little worshiping factor in when you're a fanboy of something where it's like, you put it on a pedestal. It's like you look up to it. It can do no wrong in your eyes. It's what you kind of weirdly aspire to collectively. Yeah.
For the brief like year and a half, 2 years that I was a PlayStation fanboy, it was, you know, like I said, mostly games.
You're a reformed PlayStation.
Yeah. But
it's like I did a prison stint in 96 and the 99.
This was like when I was 16.
Yeah.
But no,
you had
like
your PlayStation shirt.
When I no. Actually I had a Dreamcast shirt though. Hold on, no, I had a point. Shit. Oh, what's weird to me and is the with video games now is the deification of CEOs of various like video game companies.
Does that happen? Well, it's happened with Reggie Fils maybe because he's like the.
Well, it happens all the time with Sony and with Microsoft and with Nintendo. Like,
what happened with Steve Jobs?
Yeah,
people look at him as a god.
That is fanboyism. That's just.
It really started with Apple. When you get into the modern technology thing, before the modern console fanboyism, it kind of started with Apple, like 15 years ago, 16 years ago, when you had the iPod come out.
Yeah,
you know, that's really where it's like, oh, everything Apple. Apple's you're worshiping
the iMac.
Yeah, you're making this tech company like it's a fucking church, a religion. That used to be the big joke. It sort of died out, but there were people like that where their whole technological ecosystem revolved around Apple and only Apple. They didn't want to hear anything else. Sorry, at some point, the iPod was not the best handheld personal device. The Zune, as funny as it was, because now it's a joke in Guardians of the Galaxy, the Zune for a time was technologically superior to whatever iPod was out for a short time by Microsoft. That's the truth. I didn't have one, but you know, there were better phones than the iPhone. And there are at some point.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the iMac can suck me. That thing was terrible. A built-in fucking monitor with a computer, and it cost three times as much as your shitty Gateway, which probably was just as powerful.
Moo.
Terrible. Missed my Gateway 2000. Oh, I actually found it. That's right. That'll be a fun CU podcast. We'll just go through my old high school pictures of my Gateway 2000 that were scanned in from my. From my freaking portable cameras at the time, or disposable cameras, you know. What was I saying? Fanboyism. Are you still a fanboy of anything? You think I'm a Nintendo fanboy? Or just are just like the old stuff.
I don't know that you're a Nintendo fanboy. I just don't think you have played much outside of.
I have my 360 somewhere.
Nintendo. I don't think you're adverse to exploring.
I think L.A. Noir fan.
New realms. Yeah, I mean, maybe. Yeah, you're a Nintendo fanboy. Anyways.
See, it's right.
Yeah, that'll be the first. Anyways, so yeah. Anyway,
we're done with the CD podcast.
Done. I'm done.
You're done. You're fried.
Yeah, I'm fucked.
You're fucked. I'm gonna go check out Wendy's probably. All right. So if you like the CD podcast,
could someone please tally up the number of times Pat has gone to Wendy's after the CD podcast?
No, the last time I went to McDonald's because the last time, we ended after fucking midnight last time, or just about. So Wendy's closed by then.
All right. Well, let's wrap this up. It's 11:34.
I think they close at 11 though. Anyway, I still got to get the table and the mixer out. Because next time we're going to be at Castle Country. But thanks for supporting us. We have a Patreon, which helps us get like brand new mics like this. Well, brand new used or refurbished. CU Podcast. It's patreon.com/CU Podcast. You can follow us on Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, Podbean. You can like us and stuff.
Yeah.
On that. And we're on the YouTubes, and maybe we'll be in the Twitches eventually. And yeah, this has been fun.
It's been good. It's been a good podcast.
It's been a good one. It's been a longer one because we added these two topics that we pre-recorded. Yeah. I think we should just pre-record all the topics. It's just somehow. We'll just pre-record them all, just edit them all together from like 8 different weeks.
Just do it via FaceTime.
Do it. Well, it might get to that point. Because you can't make out the Castle Country. So for Ian Ferguson, I am Pat Country. We'll see you all next time.
I am Pat Country for Ian Ferguson.
No, you're not.